Good afternoon. I would like to call the May 6, 2015 Board of Supervisors meeting to order. And would we please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, do I need to do the adoption agenda?
Note that there's no quorum.
Right. There's no quorum for the meeting to continue at 4 o'clock. So I am going to adjourn this meeting until 6. At that time, we should have three people.
Recess.
Not adjourn. I want to recess until 6. Hope this hasn't caused any inconvenience, but it is something that we could not avoid. Okay? All right. We are now in recess.
All right.
I would like to call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for May the 6th.
Back to order.
We took a recess because we've had a very unusual situation. Mr. Ollenbach, we knew, was not going to be here. Mr. Don Weaver's son-in-law passed this morning. And then the...
I apologize.
He had his big family day.
Well, we had senior night for our team.
And he has a son that he wanted to see. So we recessed at 4, and we are here now at 6:04. Okay, so you had enough time with that? Great. Okay.
Thank y'all for all that I got.
All right. And we thank you all for your patience. Okay, now we want to adopt the agenda. May I have someone to do that?
Show me.
Mm-hmm. Second.
All right, so the next thing we're going to have is the county administrator's report.
Yes, ma'am.
Then you say you had a new screen up, right?
Oh,
you
just
want to put that back so that we can bring attention to that. As
I just
you
put
can
the love
see,
there,
I love that heart right in the middle there. It's very nice. Thank you.
Just one note on the agenda, too. Tab E is stretched on your agenda. We marked it out on there.
Okay.
We've just got another candidate, so we'll add it to your May 20th agenda.
Okay, good.
So a few things to report. The AARP tax helpers had quite a successful year again this year. They prepared more tax returns this year. It's 10% more than they did last year. And mostly e-filers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the workload they've done over the past few years at the library, and a great help to citizens in Savannah County, so we really appreciate their help.
Al, do you have feedback?
I think they will do taxes for anyone. I think they'll assist. I think that's what they told me, is they'll assist anyone with taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might have to be the short form. I'm not positive. There's another new display at the Pleasant Grove House Museum. Brian Cofield, one of our Parks and Rec staff members who staffs the museum, worked with the Historical Society and a local citizen, and they actually got a piece of the old Virginia Airline Railway, and you can see it down here with the tracks and the rail there. And so that's on display up behind the house now, too, with the markings on it. So another great addition to the Pleasant Grove House Museum and Welcome Center. Earth Day was great for the kids. We did one on Wednesday the 22nd. Where 250 first graders were out there and keeping everybody really busy all day long. Yeah, my granddaughter among them, and they had a great time. They planted trees and flowers and learned about things and had classes, and moms and dads got to help get their hands dirty with their first graders and tire them out so they'd sleep well that night. So they had a great time, and all these various groups helped with that day, and really appreciate the hard work and the coordination it took to get that done. It happened to be a beautiful day to do it, too. And then, so here's some pictures from that event, too. All these, you can see. Can you imagine having 250 first graders? I think I'd find another job.
You know, at Central, they have 12 classes of kindergartners.
Yeah. 12. So next year will be even worse then for first grade. But anyway, the kids had a great time. Lots of parents showed up to assist and lots of learning opportunities that day as well. And then the rest of the Earth Day event where we accepted resources and materials, hazardous waste and tires and medications and things like that was on Saturday the 25th. And a lot of vendors showed up and many attended the educational attractions. But there were hundreds and hundreds of cars that came through. I stopped by about 10:30 and the line was back past the high school on the highway, going all the way back to near the pole barns where the things were. So I came back at about 1:30 and the line was much shortened by then and dropped mine off. But I know some of those rascals even from Louisa County came because I'm pretty sure that the sheriff of Louisa County showed up and dropped off a bunch of tires. So I should have said something to him this morning in the meeting I was at. But
yeah,
we do have to kind of think about that. If we want to continue to keep this open for anyone who shows up or has some type of, you know, address test, but
he has quite a few deputies that have Flu Vanna addresses, so you probably put them on their cars.
Yeah, could be, but I mean, we collected four trailers.
One of them's named Sheridan.
Yeah, four trailers and tires. It's okay as long as he's a law enforcement officer that's protecting us. But that Louisa County Sheriff doesn't help us a lot. So. Not that he's not a good guy, but
right,
he doesn't patrol over here.
I'll speak with Mr. Fortune.
I will. I had a meeting with him this morning. I should have razzed him a little bit. Lots of hazardous waste collected, more than last year, and the Master Gardeners did a great demonstration. And Carol Heiser from the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries gave a talk and helped do a demonstration on the new pollinator garden at Pleasant Grove, and that's set up there now too. And so great assistance from the community volunteers who are out there, public works staff and Parks and Rec. And another beautiful day for it. Last year it was rainy and drizzly and dreary, and this one, last year was hot and sunny,
yeah,
and this year it was rainy, and drizzly, and dreary. It was much better to work with tires in, not so hot all day long. But anyway, so there's some pictures of the displays and a lot of the things we're collecting.
Look at the little tire right there.
Yeah, there was a lot of tires, a lot of tires, four truckloads full. Four semi-tractor trailer loads full, 90 footers. New feature on the website, My Two Cents, that Jonathan McMahon and Kelly Belanger Harris worked on. So it's a new feature on the main webpage, and just you click on My Two Cents, or if you want to send a message to the board on one of the other pages, it automatically lands on the My Two Cents page and allows you to check what kind of comment you want to send in and then where it's going to, and then those come in by email so we can track some of those things. And we've had a number of submissions already with compliments and concerns and questions. And so that'll be a new feature that's live on our website now. A couple new business items. Budget Electrical and Mechanical opened across the street in the old Common Ground building.
Mm-hmm.
They purchased that building. They moved in and started opening for business on the 27th of April. And they, Mr. Scott Bazaar is the president there and has lots of experience and also plans to expand already, talking about expansion plans. And another an interesting thing, Kids Store, down in Kids Store, off Route 6 and Rolling Road, are now offering delivery service. And so on Friday and Saturday evenings, and you can get groceries and sandwiches
pizza
and chicken and pizza, and you name it, delivered to your house.
Kids Store right down the street from me?
Kids Store right down the street.
Wow.
So, and it's a $2 delivery. It's just a $2 delivery charge, and they do it on Friday and Saturday night from 5 to 10.
Oh, I'll never.
And if it expands, if it does well... If it does well, then they will. They'll be looking to expand that and give some opportunities for, you know, high schoolers during the summertime,
yes,
to deliver food and groceries and things. And there's an SUP coming on a fast track to your agenda on June 3rd. A young man wants to do a concert out in Kent Store area, and it's beyond the time frame to be able to get it through the normal way. So we're just pushing it on a fast track since it's a good event, and it'll be on the Planning Commission for public hearing and Planning Commission on the 27th, and then June 3rd here. So.
And he's already promised me if he makes it big in country music, he will come to Pleasant Grove and do the concert for us.
I already talked to him about all the opportunities that he's going to do when he comes back over here.
We'll make a condition of his special.
Yeah.
No, it's an unwritten condition.
Yeah. Oh, we can make it a written condition.
So in front of you also for the board members, we talked a lot about the James River Water Pipeline and the places where we wanted fire hydrants. We've got some drawings now what those potential are, and so I'll have to talk to you about a little bit later about this. But those drawings show where the potential pipelines would be. Oops, sorry.
Every road crossing.
Every road crossing. This is from north. Now, it's actually 14 crossings, but one of them's in Louisa, so we wouldn't necessarily, you know, pay for that one there, but maybe we'll see what...
It would come in very handy because that's...
Yeah, it could. It just depends on what that Louisa may want there too. So, but that's one. If you come a little farther south towards Kent Store area, there's three of them in that area. A little farther down, a couple more right by Venable. Yeah, and then coming further down to is that Stage Junction?
Community there? House and then Stage Junction.
Yeah, Stage Junction there, and then just above.
There's a couple
above
of
Columbia. And then down in Columbia proper itself, down to where the intake would be, mm-hmm. on the access road, and then Route 6, and then up on 7 River Drive. So 14 of them, which will help along the, you know, underserved eastern side of our county for fire flows, but also possibly for insurance for homeowners too. And so could make a big difference. I'll give you the pricing and things on those later. And then what I want to do is I want to send these out to the. Someplace I clicked the wrong button. Want to send this out to the fire officials in the county so they can look at them to make sure we're not missing something or it's not listed the wrong way. I've run through it, so I think it's correct too, but I want them to look at it.
The only one I had a question on was at the point of fork. Is it crossing right where the road ends, or is that down the little
road. The gravel road that comes down off the highway, because there's properties on there, and so it's nominally showing that we may need it, may not need it, but I would think
it's paved all the way down to Dr. Sneed's. I didn't know if it was before that or if it was after.
I'll have to pull up.
That's the only one I had a question on.
So anyway, you've got the drawings there, and I'll brief you on the rest of the information for that. And your next meeting, remember, you've got a work session at 4:00. Important work session. FUSD, water systems, Zion Crossroads. Really need to do a strong update on that. So if you we really need to get that one done. We'll try to do your closed session if there's one at lunchtime, at dinner time in between, and then your regular meeting. You've got public hearings that night. So is there a public hearing? Is there a public hearing on the 20th?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think so too. But anyway, so that's your next meeting. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Any questions? You know, this week is National Education Week, and I think it's Teacher's Day on the 8th. I think he's usually May 8th. Mm-hmm. Is there any way that the Board of Supervisors can say anything to teachers?
I'll give you their phone number, ma'am. Is
there some way, I mean, they're our people, and we need to recognize them and congratulate them.
It would probably be nice if we could go around and see some of them.
Yeah, well, that we could do too. But
public and government staff week is this week too, I think. So.
Yeah, I know that Gina has a way of getting a message out to everybody, and it's just
instant alert. I wonder if you could go on the instant alert. You probably could call them and get a telephone message that goes to everyone.
Probably could, but I would like to.
Like snow days. A snow day on May 8th would be great.
We can do a little note and have you put it in their flyer that goes from there. The school broadcasts out on Fridays and goes to a little bit of everybody.
We appreciate them and everything that they do. Okay, so next we will have the Board of Supervisors updates. You have any updates, Michelle?
We are meeting on Friday with the Columbia Workforce.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Mr.
Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission is tomorrow as well. FEMA Workforce Network Council had a work session group with local IT-related business personnel and recruiters on how they can better target technology jobs in the area. And that was hosted yesterday.
I went to the mayor and chairs meeting on the 24th, and Mr. Popovich went in Mr. Nichols' place because he was on vacation. And we had a report from Thomas Jefferson just giving us some general information, but the interesting thing was to hear the things that the other counties were engaged in and what they were doing, et cetera. So that was that. And then there was a Rivanna River Basin Commission meeting in which I had a conflict. I couldn't go to that, but Mr. Marvin Morris did go. And I called him to see how things was going. And I know that the Thomas Jefferson people are working with the Rivanna Basin Commission trying to get them on their feet. So, yeah, that's all right. So they're moving along. I think they're revitalizing a little bit now because it's really important that we stay involved with Rubber and the Ribbon, what's happening. And they did host a scenic river seminar. And I think the Blue Ridge people were sponsored it, and I didn't attend. I understand that that was very interesting. So we will continue to try to give you a little bit more information on Rabbi and the River Commission to keep you informed. Okay, next I will open up our first public comments. If we have anyone who would like to speak to the board, would you please come to the mic and give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes. Yes, ma'am. That's all right, take your time.
Hi, my name is Audrey Better. I'm my husband, Walter Better, and we live in the Cherokee section of Lake Monticello. We're here because of the concern of traffic flow that goes past the Cherokee section. When we try to pull out of both entrances, there's blind spots. The oncoming traffic, sometimes it's going past 45 miles an hour. And when you go to pull out, it does take a few seconds to get up to that speed. You have people right at your bumper. My husband did bring his concern to Sheriff Hess at the newcomers meeting in February. He told us to contact James Glass at VDOT, which we did. He acted very quickly. And he did a traffic study for us, which I have here. We've received this copy. We did give it to the sheriff late March, and we still have not heard of anything. We contacted the Board of Supervisors, Tom O'Brien, in April. He advised us to come to the town meeting. I guess what we're trying to look for is some kind of a sign that can tell the oncoming traffic to slow the roll a little bit. I don't know what kind of signs were new to Virginia, but it's very dangerous. He even clocked one car going 70 miles an hour. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anyone else who would like to speak?
Since we have VDOT representatives here,
yeah,
tonight,
no,
maybe,
VDOT,
maybe they can talk a little bit about it while they're up too.
Right. The VDOT people are here.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Great timing.
Yes. Anyone else would like to speak to the board? If not, I will close the first public comment. We do not have a public hearing. Action items is a funding request for the James River Water Authority. Mr. Nichols.
Yes, ma'am. The interim agreement for the construction of the James River Water Authority project, the intake and the first mile or so of pipe in the Columbia area, has been signed. And the portion of funding that comes 50% from each of the counties, from Louisa and from Vanna County. For the project, that initial part of the project is $725,000. And so 50% from each county would be the $362,500. So I'm requesting $362,500. But that funds are not permanent funds. Those funds will come back to Fluvanna County and back to Louisa County as soon as the debt financing for the project is issued, because these costs are rolled into the issuance of the debt. Like when you get a mortgage on your house and you're getting something else done at the same time, it rolls all in together, so you essentially pay yourself back. So this is an advance to the Water Authority to allow them to pay the bills until the debt financing comes through, and that's expected in the summer VRA pool. So there's a resolution attached to your package, mm-hmm. which essentially says that it comes from unrestricted fund balance and that each county will pay 50% of that. Louisa County has it on their agenda for next week as well, or for the next meeting as well. And if this is approved by the board, then we would just cut the check, get a deposit in the JRWA account. And then when the bond proceeds come in the next 60 to 120 days, I'm not sure the exact time frame, June or a little bit after, once the bond proceeds come in, then that money will be refunded back to Fluvanna County and go back into the general fund balance.
All right, any questions about this?
I can't remember. We're in the ballpark with this figure, right?
The figure you remembered for the James River Water Authority project is in the range of about $5 million.
This beginning part. I think.
Yeah. Well, the 725 is the only figure we've had the whole time, but I've never really given you these figures.
Okay.
I've only given you the $5 million. This is a subset of the $5 million.
Right.
We haven't negotiated the comprehensive agreement under the PPA yet. This is the interim. And this essentially gives us, let me show you on here. This essentially gives you the initial almost complete design. I'll pull up this last page and you'll be able to see it here, what that $725,000 consists of. So it's a little bit difficult to read, but it's the 85% design on the intake and the lines, the administrative fees, real estate acquisition services, the threatened and endangered surveys that happen to happen because of the wetlands and the water there, the geotechnical surveys, those types of things. So that's what this $725,000 pays for. It's the front-end design. When the comprehensive agreement comes through, we'll have an agreed-to price for the whole project, of which this is a subset.
Okay.
So, we're still in the same ballpark that we've talked about, from about in the 4.7 to 5.5 range overall. We had budgeted 2.75 is what we were planning on.
All right.
For Fluvanna County.
Any other questions? If not, we're ready for the motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation for James River Water Authority, JRWA, in the amount of $362,500 for costs associated with PPA interim agreement for administrative engineering and water withdrawal system design efforts, with funding to come from uncommitted fund balance and such funds to be repaid to Fluvanna County from the JRWA bond issuance proceeds.
Okay.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. O'Brien and seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Madam Chairman, the record should show Messrs. Weaver and Ellenbrook are absent, and we don't anticipate their being here at all tonight.
Okay.
So the vote was 3-0, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. O'Brien, and the chairman.
Okay, so that's on the record. Okay. Next, we will have the Dominion Environmental Stewardship Grant Award.
I'll do this one, ma'am.
From Jason.
Mm-hmm. So I'll show you a reason why Mr. Smith is not here.
Okay.
So just a quick thing. We've got another possibility for a grant from Dominion, and it's a $5,000 grant that will go towards that pollinator garden that was put in at Pleasant Grove during Earth Day. And this would cover the fence, a kind of the deer-proof fence, the kind that angles out from the pollinator garden. So that's what this supplies are for, and also for some kiosks and information and interpretive designs around the park. So here's some examples of some of those interpretive designs that would come out of that grant, and the signs that would go up for when people are walking through the park or going to the pollinator garden, and so that's what that grant was for. Once the board agreed to that, we would go forward with the potential for that grant, and I think it'll be approved, of course. And then that's why he's not here, because Lola May needed him, so.
Okay.
Ms. Booker didn't see you.
Oh.
How old is
there
baby?
She is.
She was just born in January.
Yeah.
Lola May.
Yeah. Oh.
So I told him I'd cover.
Okay, well, thank you for doing that. I know he appreciates it.
I move to accept the $5,000 Dominion Environmental Stewardship Grant Award to be used for a pollinator garden fence kiosk, interpretive signage, and additional tree tubes to be positioned at Pleasant Grove Park.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
It was very tempting to say interpretive dance by Mr. Nixon.
Chair votes aye.
I could do that.
Next, we have VDOT quarterly report, and I don't think Mr. Joel DiNanzio is here, but
no, Mr. Greg Banks is here representing VDOT and some other staff members. And
I knew you were going to be here, Mr. Banks. I just like to say Joel DiNanzio.
I'm going to.
Did I say it right?
Thank you. Can you make sure yours was with Mr. O'Brien, and I'll let Mr.
I left mine sitting on the front seat of the truck.
I'm the only one did my homework.
Damn, I have mine on the front seat.
There are a few changes that Mr. Banks is going to propose in there on some of the rural rustic roads, and wanted to be able to go through that. So.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, here tonight to brief you on the secondary 6-year plan update. that we will have a public hearing on May 20th at 7 p.m. here to Humana County to update the secondary six-year plan. I prepared a pack of information that I believe you have for you now.
Yes.
This is something I do each and every year, so I won't go through every single tab with you, but I would like to get a few tabs here for a general overview of the process.
And now remember, this will come up then for public hearing on the May 20th? Yeah, May 20th meeting.
Under tab one of the booklet you have before you, you will see the projected allocations for this year's secondary six-year plan update. You will see that there are two fund types in the secondary six-year plan available this year for allocations. They are the CTB formula unpaved state. These funds are to be used on gravel roads only. They carry a traffic count of 50 vehicles per day or greater. You will see that the first year, fiscal year 16, has an allocation of $14,467, and then followed by $17,661, and so forth. The Telefee Fund, those funds are less restricted. Those funds can be used on either gravel or hard surface roadways. In the instance of your secondary six-year plan, the Telefee Fund is being used on Route 600 and Route 633, a couple mile-wide projects in the secondary six-year plan.
That's not for a couple of years, though, right?
That's sometime out in the future, yes, sir. That's correct. But that's the fund type that's being allocated towards those projects. The gravel road projects are, again, being allocated in the CTB formula on page state, which has to have, again, have a caveat of 50 vehicles per day. Over on tab two, you'll see some facts here about Fluvanna County. There's about 299 miles of secondary roads in Fluvanna County. Of that, about 284 miles of paved, so a considerable number of roads here in Fluvanna County are already paved. Leaving about roughly 16 miles, there's some railing issues here, but about 16 miles of non-hard surface roads here in the county. And of that, about 1.9 miles currently qualify for hard surfacing, meaning that the majority of these roads that are gravel carry less than 50 vehicles per day. There are a few that carry more than 50 vehicles per day and are eligible for hard surfacing. I'll speak to that a little bit more here in a moment. But to date, there are 0.95 miles of unpaved roads currently included in the new secondary six-year plan. Some figures here at the bottom, one of the statements is $800,000 per mile to pave an unpaved road. Our rural rustic program, we've been very successful here in Fluvanna County. We have been able to hard surface a number of roads considerably cheaper than that. We've been doing roads for somewhere around $200,000 to $250,000 a mile. That allows us to hard surface a roadway inside of its existing right-of-way without getting any additional easements. A whole lot less engineering goes into it, so therefore it's a lot of cost savings. So the rural rustic program is truly the program of choice where we get the most bang for our buck. So that's the program we really look to take advantage of. Under tab four, you will see last year's secondary six-year plan. This is the document that was approved, looks like June 4. I'll briefly go through each project in the existing secondary six-year plan. There is a priority one is a bridge replacement over Brimo Road over Holman Creek. There is some previous funding on that project for Ian right-of-way, however, there are no dedicated bridge funds at this time for construction. That remains the case again this year, I do believe. Our dedicated bridge funds are on a competing basis against other bridge projects around the district. And because this project still has a sufficiency rating fairly high, it's not receiving any construction funds at this time. Hopefully that will change in the future. However, there are some bridges in much worse shape around our district. Hales Bend Road was the second priority of this project, and I have to report to you has been completed. And that will be a theme on several of these gravel road projects. Priority three is North Boston Road. This is a minor widening project from Route 616 to Route 633. This project, as Mr. Nichols has pointed out, is a few years off at this time. We've been in the PE phase of this project now. I think we've been doing some survey work, some aerial survey work. So we hope to get started on some plans there in the near future. That project, along with the next project, North Boston Road, Route 633, the Termini Bids from Route 600 to 631, you'll see that those two projects are taking all the Telefee funds on your existing secondary six-year plan. 633, the second project, even with those Telefee funds programmed to it, there is a considerable balance to complete, even beyond the life of the secondary six-year plan. So there's going to be quite some time for both of those projects are fully funded. The next priority in your plan, Lantry Lane, again, I'm happy to report has been completed. That's another project along with the Hales Bend Road that can be removed with the updated secondary six-year plan this year. And to continue with that theme, over on the next page, Priority 6 Canal Street has been completed as well, followed by Radisson Circle, Route 687, which was a gravel road road rustic project as well. That project has been completed. So Canal Street, Radisson Circle, Lantern Lane, Hellsbend Road, there's four projects there that we will be removing from this year's secondary six-year plan that have been completed since last year when we had this meeting. The projects, next two projects we hope to have under construction this construction season are Stone Lane Road from Route 601 to nearly back out around 15 right across the way here. And finally, Union Church Road, Route 714. These two projects, we have enough previous funding on them at this point in time in order to hard surface both of them this construction season. The final project in last year's secondary six-year plan is Deep Creek Road. This is a bridge replacement project. This is receiving dedicated bridge funds and is funded over the course of the next 4 years through our central office and the dedicated bridge fund.
This is not part of that.
I can move on here just a moment. Are there any questions at this point?
These numbers don't match with the numbers there. This is a separate. This is just their monthly report. There is a project though that I'm wondering if it's on there and I've just missed it. On Route 15 South, I guess about in here, just south of, no, before you get to Carysbrook.
So it's north of Carysbrook.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just before you get to North Carysbrook, where the VDOT, places on the left-hand side.
Sure.
Just go up over the hill, past that. On the right-hand side, there's that the beauty parlor.
Yeah.
Cuts and Candy. Cuts and Candy.
What's
the road next to that?
It's on here.
It's
with a C. Cannon Street or Canal Street?
No,
Canal
Street is Scottsville.
With a C.
It's right across from the state shed.
Cannery Lane.
That's the one.
That's it.
Well, they're working on it now.
Okay, and that may be some maintenance function. I'm not certain what that is.
A lot of trucks out there.
Something that construction money is being spent on.
Right.
Because it looked like they were doing real rustic.
I'll defer to Jamie back here. You need to be aware of something going on out there. But I believe that's probably something being done in the area headquarters. Okay. That road was hard surfaced probably 2, maybe 3 years ago through the secondary 6-year plan. Okay. And it's been removed since the project has been completed.
But there was just a bunch of trucks out there.
You're doing work on Central Plains now, right?
Excuse me?
Central Plains. Aren't you doing something on our
repaving?
Repaving.
Again, it's probably a maintenance function. There may be some repaving and things of that nature.
Okay.
Are you aware of anything? If it's not in the 6-year plan, it's most likely a maintenance function.
Okay. All right.
Under tab 5, you will see all of the secondary routes here in Fluvanna County. They're in numeric order by route. You'll see traffic counts today in which they're collecting their P and U for paved and unpaved. Certain segments are highlighted in yellow. Those particular segments carry a project in your secondary six-year plan. Tab 6 is all of your unpaved roads. You will see there nearly 16 miles and 15.67 miles that are here in Fluvanna County. And you'll see that the common theme is that the majority of these roads are less than 50 vehicles per day. As I stated a moment ago, all of your gravel road projects in your existing plan are either complete or will be completed this construction season, which creates the need to add additional unpaved roads to your secondary six-year plan with this year's update. Under tab 7, there is a list of all of your gravel roads that have a traffic count of 50 vehicles per day or greater, which is the 1.9 miles I quoted earlier. Looking at this list, you'll see that the 0.95 miles that's currently in your plan is made up of Stone Lane Road and Union Church Road. We've looked at this list several times, and I've actually had at least three roads counted recently that were in the 40 vehicle per day range to see if we could do a more recent count to see if they would bump up over 50. Two of those roads came back at less than 50 again. One did go up over 50 to give us another candidate project to add to the plan. Excuse me?
Which road was that?
That was Route 680, Middle Fork Road off of Long Acre. It's a dead-end road. But going through these briefly, 674 Timber Road is an extremely narrow road. It's probably not conducive to being done as a rural rustic. Half of it lies in Goochland County. I know that Fluvanna is probably too excited about putting Fluvanna funds in Goochland County. White Hill Road is a dead-end road that has a bridge on it that's posted to where we can get construction equipment across, so we'd only be able to build half of it, so it's not a very candidate end. A 747 two-county lane is a two-tenth of a mile road, and half of it falls in Louisa and half of Flew Bound. The section in Louisa doesn't qualify because it's less than 50 vehicles per day. Probably not a great candidate end. 1102 Fayette Street is down in Columbia. It does carry more than the 50 vehicles per day needed. This particular segment is in the midst of gravel on each side. We would hope to build all of Route 1102, which is about a half a mile segment, and use this traffic count. Yes, sir. That's the plan, the hope. So 1102 Fayette Street from, I believe it's 1103 to 1108, is what we certainly can do. It's about a half a mile. We'd like to get down there and see how we start running our budget, maybe even do some of the side streets if it makes sense, that's something we can do. Again, that's pretty much the whole segment that parallels Route 6 on the northern end of Columbia.
And west of 659.
There's a segment west of 659 and a larger segment
right,
east of 659.
Right, the makes the L.
That's correct. That's exactly correct. So 1102 would be the one street that we do recommend to add to the secondary six-year plan with this year's update. And then finally, Route 680 is one that we counted. We counted for 5 days because we felt like there was a good chance that the traffic count was going to be considerably higher on weekends. It had a load count of 36. The average count was 73, which simply means that there was counts greater than 100 vehicles per day on the weekend, which we thought would probably be likely with a business that's back there. So 680 would probably be the next priority project we would recommend adding to the six-year plan. The road is reasonably wide enough to do as a rural rustic project at this time, so it would make sense to add it to the six-year plan based on the traffic count, based on the width that's there now.
That's the road back to Sporting Clays.
That's correct.
So there's a lot of traffic on the weekends of shooters coming in for the traffic.
For information as well, I counted Turner Road, counted it two times in the last year, 40 and 46. I counted Route 677 over Fort Plain off 640 Shores Road. It came back at 40 vehicles per day. Both of those roads were around 40 a few years back. Even in counting them again, they didn't get above 50.
If you'll just tell us what day you're going to count, we can get the traffic coming.
I'm wondering if some of these roads that happened where somebody went out there.
I cannot confirm that sometimes that does not happen. I see some anomalies sometimes without that. Whether it's bicycles and kids or what have you, I definitely see some instances where there's years and years go by and it's 40 and you see 110 and down to 5. But that's where we are today with those roads.
One of the concerns that was recently raised, and I'm not sure if this is a question in terms of are there any choices and options available with some of these funds, is we have some developments that haven't qualified for VDOT taking them over, and because of the downturn in the housing market and the economy, some of these developments went into bankruptcy, as well as the roads have deteriorated over the course of the years, and so now building permits and so on are becoming an issue there. And the existing homeowners, are struggling to find solutions and ways to bring their roads up to speed. Does VDOT offer any programs along those lines? Can they take into account, I don't think this is unique to Flew Bound, I suspect this is happening in a lot of other places, where perhaps some of the newer rules that VDOT has been put in place can be put on hold for a period of time to allow these roads to be caught up, if you would, at a lesser expense from that standpoint, because it's obviously a negative downturn both for those particular communities and residences, but likewise the property values are decreased if people can't get building permits in there and the community can't grow and actually can't solve the problem. So it seems like a bad trap. And I think it'd be ideal to know what VDOT offers, especially when we're struggling to spend money on roads that really aren't impacting in the same way that some of these other situations are impacting the county.
You are correct. This is a common theme in several of the counties I visit. Back under tab 4 of the secondary six-year plan, over on the the fourth page, there is a line item in your secondary six-year plan for rural conditions. Rural Additions is a program in which the department can take private roads into the state system. Now, in doing so, there is a pretty stringent set of criteria in order to bring a road into the state system. It has to carry at least 3 homes per mile. It has to be dedicated to the public use prior to a date in 1992. It can't have any speculative interest by the developer, meaning he can't still own residences or parcels there along the roadway. At this time, there's $78,957 in that particular bond fund. Not a lot of money when it comes to road construction, just to be normal. By code, you are allowed to place 5% of your telefee funds on that addition line. Now, your telefee funds under your projections for tab 1 were $80,395. So that's about $4,000 for me. Mm-hmm. That's not going to get you anywhere very quickly, mm-hmm. to be frank. We do have those roads that do qualify through our rural addition program. There, you can also go through the revenue sharing program, where the county can put up half the money, and then the state will match it, provided that it does qualify as a rural addition. There's an ability there where the county set up a special taxation district in that area to contribute funds, and we could use it for some revenue sharing program. Mm-hmm. In years past, where your allocations were $1 million, 5% was a considerable amount of money, and improved pretty quickly, and some of these projects could be a little bit more feasible. With a telefee of $8,000 and 5% of that being roughly $4,000, it's not tremendously feasible to do some of that. But there are means with the revenue sharing program. If the county is committed towards putting up half the money, or by some other means able to collect those funds, put it up to supply half the funds for the project. And again, provided it meets the criteria of the rural addition program.
And is that $78,000 just for the 5-year plan, or is it an annual amount?
$78,000 is what you have accrued to date. Uh-huh. That's what you have right now. You are allowed by code section to allocate 5% of your telefee funds in future years. So your telefee funds are about $80,000 per year. So you could set aside $4,000 per year.
I see. But so that $78,000 came from the telefees?
That, from previous
in the
years.
Rural addition program?
From previous years, yes.
I see. Okay,
so you go, if you set aside 5% this year, you go 78 to 82. And
gotcha.
And probably 82 to 86.
Okay.
So the cost of construction obviously is not cheap, and $86,000 doesn't go along with it, to be honest. But in larger projects, revenue sharing is typically the way it's done. And again, that can be a fairly painful process as well to one's budget and so having to supply half the amount of funds in order to upgrade. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And no other monies like some of these other rural gravel roads?
No, don't. Sir. They would use the existing state maintained gravel roads and traffic counts to get people to that area.
And getting the roads up to where VDOT takes it over, that I believe the rules were changed recently on that, or is that a correct assumption there?
I'm not certain.
The standards changed. I mean, you know, I'm a neophyte to this, but my understanding is that the developers usually, you know, set the grading on the road so that it's near there, but then, you know, there's a lot of travel. They do that last final pass on it,
sure.
And then it's VDOT. You know, VDOT can take it over at that point in time.
Typically, when a developer builds a street, they have to build it certainly to VDOT standards. Mm-hmm. We go out and look at the street to make sure everything is according to standard. And if not, we develop a punch list, and they have to come back and address those items, and then we do the paperwork to bring them to the system. Unfortunately, with the downturn of the economy, somewhere in that process, in the past, it seems like developers have went out of business, and maybe the bond isn't sufficient to cover the amount of work that's left, and then we end up with instances.
So are there any initiatives at the state level or at VDOT level to discuss this?
You know,
is there any hope for these people?
Joe can probably speak to that better. I believe he's had some of those conversations. I know of anything, know of nothing at this point in time myself. But I hope maybe Joe will be here on the 20th and maybe speak to that a little bit more in depth. I'm certainly aware of the rural addition program, but it's really tough to fund some of these projects.
And a lot of these folks that are coming up, they're asking, what can we do? How do we do it? Are there any general guidelines or documentation that VDOT can provide to those associations and or to those communities?
Sure. I know Joel has been active with several communities in Greene County. We have rural addition guidelines. We have manuals of that sort to tell the process of what needs to be done as far as the criteria of when it needs to have to be dedicated to public use. There used to be a whole pamphlet. How do I get my road brought into the state system, at least some of those are still floating around. So there is a fair bit of information out there. It just seems to come down to the funding.
Exactly. Right. The problem is almost all of those subdivisions either don't have any bond left on it or the bond is not sufficient. And the checklists have already been provided to the developers and or the homeowners, but most of those are not homeowners associations, right. So they can't even enforce anything.
Right, but
so
that's what they're looking for, saying, hey, how do we create this? What's our mechanism? Because they're sitting there and saying, we don't know what to do next from that standpoint. Do we create a homeowners association? Do we create a group or whatever? What are kind of the steps that we can take to get some momentum going on this? Because they recognize that their investment is at risk, and that they have to take care of the roads at some level, And if they could have a plan and or a guideline that would let them see where they're going to go, I think that'd be a real service that the county could provide to those.
I'm not sure we should be heading in the direction potentially. We can do what the board says, but that we should be heading in the direction on how to set up homeowner associations. That's
I think just here's an issue. I mean, we were presented with this issue. We have, 20 some odd communities that are that fall under this category. Mm-hmm. I think from the county's perspective, the fact that these communities can no longer have homes built on them in many cases, that the property values are likely to decrease if the roads deteriorate. It's a problem, I think, at the end of the day.
The solution is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And that is, somebody needs to come up with the money to build the roads up to appropriate standard and post the appropriate bonds. Then VDOT will take them over.
Right.
Because what Mr. Banks was talking about is the rural addition policy, which is not exactly the same thing as taking in a standard rate or subdivision street. Because it has I think you mentioned that the dedication has to be effective in 1992. That's been a floating figure. It gets kicked back by statute periodically. I don't think any of these are there may be a couple of them, but the more prominent ones have nothing to do with 1992. They're much later. Mm-hmm. So really, it's simple. Somebody needs to come up with this money. An owner's association, you certainly could establish an owner's association. It would be, it wouldn't be the same kind of association that you would have had it been done when the subdivision was originally platted.
Well, that's part of the problem. The brick mailboxes that are too close to the roadway that prohibit VDOT, that's one of the requirements. Not sure the HOA could tell them to take it down after it's...
Well, that's simple. If you build a brick mailbox pedestal in the right of way, you're trespassing, and anybody can make them remove it. The county certainly can, because technically the county holds title to those roads. So that kind of thing certainly can be done. An owners association, I believe, and I don't want to. Foreclose some, might be some option I haven't thought of, but an owner association might be helpful in terms of organizing the property owners and coordinating the efforts to get this money raised.
And for example, they might coordinate the effort to say, yes, we would like to submit to a special taxation district, and what could you do to help finance this process through us and using the road sharing type of program? That's a possibility, I would suspect.
It was prior to 1992.
That's only prior to 1992?
That is a floating baby. It has not floated in quite some time. It's probably been 10 years since 1992. Years ago...
I'm older than you, Mr. Banks. I remember when I was...
So the road sharing program is only for homes...
For those roads qualified prior to 1992. That would be 1992 at this time, and it has been quite some time. But if I recall, when it was even prior to 1992, you're correct, it floated. It has not for quite some time.
And it probably... The thing he didn't say that I think he implied was it's not likely to.
Sure, no, I get that. And so, it's just one of those bleak answers for everybody.
There are things that might be done that might contribute to solving what I call a simple problem. It's a difficult problem, but it's simple.
Well, the developer waits till the lots are on fire sale and then he subsidizes it. By building the roads at that point in time would be the likely approach on that.
Well, that's possible. So far, the developers have waited for the fire sale and not subsidized the roads.
Right. No, I understand that. I understand that, too.
So, I think the county could certainly try to help these property owners and certainly would try to help, but there's not much you can do. I don't even think it's lawful for you to subsidize this kind of road building other than through the revenue sharing and whatnot that Mr. Banks mentioned.
But that revenue sharing only applies to 1992.
Right. It wouldn't apply in this circumstance. So I know homeowners have come in and said, why can't the county just put up the money to build these roads? And I don't think it's as simple as that, because I don't think the county's got the authority to do that, even if it wanted to.
Yeah, and a couple examples. I mean, there are certainly neighborhoods that have the VDOT checklist in their hand, and developers had it before that, and there have just been homeowners that have just refused to change this or fix this or do that, whether it's because they don't have kids and don't worry about the buses or what the case is. But the front end has got to be better tracking of the bonds on the very front end.
Sure.
So that somebody can't get away with it and can't walk away from it until it's taken care of.
Right. When did we start requiring bonds?
Oh, we always have.
Always have.
Sure. This was frankly a mistake. It was an oversight that these bonds were not enforced before they were.
In this case, the bond was probably refunded and shouldn't have been, but I'm not sure there was. We can't find a record of it.
It was probably
in that one subdivision.
It was probably a letter of credit that expired.
And certainly the subdivisions that are close, you know, if they were actually assessed to being close and understood the risk that they put themselves at by not following through, might feel the pressure to actually make that leap
well,
so that they can be taken over by
one of the things that I won't tell you this absolutely is happening, but I suspect it's happening, is that you're seeing a little bit of chicken being played between between successor developers and homeowners. Where, you know, sort of
sure.
After you, Alphonse, no, after you, Gaston. Right. And if they get together and get it done, they can get it done.
Right.
And I understand that I wouldn't want to have to pay for it again myself either. But at the end of the day, we work with the art of the possible.
Mm-hmm. And if lots are available and someone wants to build on the lots and make some profit off selling, you know, homes on those lots, one of the only ways to hold someone accountable in the future, besides the individual homeowners themselves, is by restricting, you know, building permits.
I thought there might be a real opportunity there with the revenue road sharing program.
Yeah, but again, those developments we're talking about, especially the ones on 53, are post 92.
And it's got to be a huge problem statewide in a lot of these locations where you have just dozens of them, probably in each county, that have faced these same problems. And it's just.
Any county that had a lot of growth. I mean, we had a lot of growth peripheral to Lake Monticello, outside of Lake Monticello, so you've got a lot of those subdivisions while Lake Monticello was still growing out in 1992 and 2010. But it's kind of done now.
Sorry to sidetrack you.
No, that's
fine. Thank you.
I believe that was the conclusion of what I had as far as the additional projects we had. We would recommend Lafayette Street and Middle Fork Road based on the traffic counts. I have lots of other information in the book, but for the sake of your time and boredom, I will keep them more on the grid. But I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. No further questions?
Thank you. Three
more questions. Go ahead,
absolutely.
I might ask you to just comment on the vetters' concerns and what would be the steps that we would take there. Looks like your colleague is offering to do that there.
I'm Jake Glass. I'm the program manager for Charlottesville Residency. Used to be a district in Louisa for a while. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to comment a second on what Mr. Vetter brought up. They contacted us with some concerns they were having. It seemed when they were exiting the subdivision street on 618, the traffic was coming upon extremely quick. They initially asked for a sign, but they had no signs for a private subdivision street that was posted on the state road. So what I recommended we do is do a study out there and took a speed sample for a week just to see what the speed limits were. And basically the study indicated that a high percentage of motorists using 618 were exceeding the posted speed limit. And at that point, it actually became a law enforcement issue. I think the better they contacted the sheriff, I don't think they had any feedback from him.
The sheriff put one of the speed signs out there, the digital signs that actually show your speed as you're driving down there, because that's been out there for a little while now, too.
So, at this point, there really is not a whole lot we can do because we can't enforce anything. We provided the data, and hopefully the sheriff will maybe increase controls out there. It's maybe something that the board can address with the sheriff, since we have the data to back up what's going on there.
Can we get a copy of the report, Jim?
Yeah.
And so, for my general understanding, what creates the determination that says this is now a 45 mile an hour zone, this is a 35, this is a 25 mile an hour zone?
Well, traffic engineering, they have certain criteria. I can't tell you, I'm not a traffic engineer, I don't do the actual studies, but they do have specific criteria that they have to follow. And based on the data they gather, that determines what practice speed is.
What's the speed limit out there now?
45. And like Mr. said, that we've actually documents them on trying to make excess of 70.
I had somebody pass me in the driver's ed car on double line on that road.
So speeding is the issue right there. I'd say there's nothing at this point we can do. We'd be glad to try to reduce the space if it's more healthy. At this point, it's basically law enforcement issue.
We've studied 618 multiple times.
Yeah,
and, yes. I mean, it's posted 45 for a reason. Enforcing the posted 45 is something we'll have to work on.
And there are a lot of side streets coming in through 618.
Sure.
It's heavily traveled, especially peak hours. And I can see where it's enforcement. Actual patrol cars with radar units are probably the best.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Just to emphasize one thing Mr. Glass said, you can't just say, we're going to lower the speed limit because it needs to be lowered. It has to be based on technical studies. And if it doesn't comply with that, the VDOT can't and you can't lower that speed limit.
I assumed that. I just didn't know what was kind of the general guideline.
Yeah, anything speed related is based on Code of Virginia. So Code of Virginia dictates what they can and can't do it
Okay.
So thank you.
Any maintenance issues before I leave?
Yes. So 53, you've done some patching all along 53, especially from the high school this way, along 53 up to Food Line Shopping Plaza, but the new striping has been put down.
Yeah.
Will that be done this summer sometime?
Yes.
Okay. And then we're still interested in two things. Paving, we want to have an on-site meeting. We've talked to Joel about this a couple of times, but want an on-site meeting at Pleasant Grove Park to be able to look at the potential of paving to the new parking lot, not around the museum, because the museum is open now, and it's just an old gravel road that goes to the parking lot, but we'd like to get to the parking lot off the VDOT maintained road now.
Yeah, and it may qualify for recreation access.
Right, so we need to do an on-site walkthrough, because there's a couple different things we want to look at. And then the last thing is the speed study. I think Mr. Popowitz had talked to the office about. We're really interested in knowing, and this has been done about 1,000 times, but I think it needs to be done once and final. The speed limit changes from here at the intersection of 53 all the way up to Food Line multiple times. And it's 55 and 45 and then 55 and of course 45 when you get down the Albemarle line, but really from the Food Line Plaza all the way down past the high school and through the new traffic circle and through the intersection of Rio Grande Lake Road, which is a really bad intersection that I drive every day, it ought to be 45 all along the way instead of 55, 45, 55, 45. And it's almost like we're doing a speed study in a little section of it, and a little section of it, but not a coordinated run of it. And it's curvy, street, all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I know they've done several speed studies. They've actually done a couple quarter studies.
Yeah, well.
And so I can talk to traffic engineering and then get some feedback on them, what they think.
I'd really like to meet with them and talk to them.
The 45 mile an hour speed sign is directly after the awful turn in the intersection.
Right.
And
it goes to 55 right at Rio Grande Lake Road, intersection.
I mean, as soon as you come by Rio Grande Lake and come around that curve, then you see the 45 sign.
But we really want to look at it as a comprehensive look from from 618, where Effort Baptist Church is, Lake Montreal Road, all the way to at least past the high school. It straightens out when you get past the high school down here. But up that way, it's just constant traffic, and there's problems all along there. So, although traffic circle's been a good thing.
Adding on to one thing you said just then, talking about getting to the parking lot at Pleasant Grove House, and you said something about recreational funding. Would that qualify from the end of the state maintained down to the parking lot?
That's what we want to do.
You're talking about in the soccer fields?
From the ball fields to the parking lot and from,
okay, from
the,
both of them.
Right, going both ways. That's why I want to do an on-site visit and show them.
So there's probably 500 cars on the weekend.
Indeed, and it's terrible.
From soccer and baseball fields. Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else? We have them here.
Great, thanks. We'll look forward to that speech study from Lake Montreal Road, because then I'll
send that to you.
We'll remind the sheriff's office and plus the Lake Montreal police, because they control that too.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
I didn't know they had the authority to represent that.
They do.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Glass.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Now we have 2014 development activity report. Mr. Jay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mm-hmm. This is the 2014 development activity report. That's the cover of the document. It's pretty similar to last year, just some different construction papers, curves, and color scheme. The DAR, which is the development activity report, allows land use comparisons and trends to be seen over time, which provides important clues for future needs, such as new school bus routes and traffic systems. The DAR report reflects the outcome of development by election district and by land use planning area, and evaluates the county's preservation initiatives. It allows an analytical observation of the relationship between land use planning and various application requests, and provides a quantitative summary of development through 2014 and indicates where in the county this growth is taking place. Right into the summary. The land use planning areas. Fluvanna County's comprehensive plan, which was adopted in 2009 and is currently being updated, continues to influence growth and development decisions. The comprehensive plan's designated growth areas cover 11%, which is 20,000 acres, of the county. The growth areas, which are known as community development areas, are located near existing population centers and are intended to receive the majority of new development. Roughly 89%, or 165,000 acres, of the county is designated as rural by the comprehensive plan. There are two designations for rural areas. Those are rural residential and rural preservation.
Why do we use community development area in this, but other documents use community planning area?
We use both interchangeably.
Okay, can we use one?
Yes.
Okay, pick one.
Me?
You guys in plan on
community planning area.
Because I didn't know what a community CPA. Development area is, because we use CPAs all
sure.
the time. So
yeah.
Got to use one or the
okay.
other.
Okay, CPAs.
CPAs.
Yeah.
There were 70 building permits for new homes issued in 2014. This was a slightly over 20% decrease from the 88 permits issued in 2013. 27 building permits for new homes were issued within the designated growth areas, the CDAs. 43 building permits for new homes were issued within the rural areas of the county. 47 new lots were approved in 20 new subdivision lots were approved in 2014, which was a 261.5% increase from the 13 new lots approved in 2013. 31 which was about 66% of the new lots approved, were within the community planning areas. 16, or about 34% of the new lots, were approved within the rural areas. Most of the new lots approved within the rural areas were associated with family subdivisions, which are the smallest as opposed to the major and minor, and that was 77.7% of the lots approved within the rural areas. There were 14 site development plans reviewed in 2014, which was a 7% increase from the 13 plans reviewed in 2013. Just over 42% of the site development plans reviewed were located within the community planning areas. 8 special use permits were reviewed in 2014, which was the same amount as reviewed in both 2012 and 2013. 4 of these SUPs that were reviewed were located outside of the community planning area, so about half. 5 rezoning applications were considered in 2014. 3 of the rezoning applications were approved. No zoning text amendments were approved in 2014. 1 variance was granted by the Board of Zoning Appeals in 2014. This was the first one that the Board of Zoning Appeals had considered since March 2nd, 2010.
Wow.
Regarding code compliance, 8 zoning complaints were investigated in 2014, which was a 43% decrease. I apologize for the decrease and increase. There's a decrease from the 12 complaints investigated in 2013. 5 of the cases that were initiated were resolved, and 3 are pending resolution. And just to make clear on this, that doesn't mean that those are the only things that our compliance officer looked at. Those were just the ones that went far enough that they were reported and investigated. So, for example, if he received a call and he went out there and nothing was going on, that never got to the point of investigation. Or if he received a call and spoke to the resident and they said, gosh, I'm sorry, I'll clean that up right now, and there's no need for it to go. So he did a lot of work that isn't reflected in that number.
Yeah, and he gives us a report, too.
You know how much more you and finally, land conservation. There are 19 agricultural and forestal districts known as AFDs in Fluvanna County. This includes 18,299 acres, which is almost 10% of the county. AFD enrollment decreased by approximately 396 acres in 2014. There are 338 parcels in the AFDs. As of January of this year, 13,266 acres of the county are protected by conservation easements held by various organizations. And as of January of this year, 111,140 acres, which is almost 60% of the county, were enrolled within the land use taxation program. And that sums it up. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
There's a lot going on out there now.
Yeah.
Picking up.
The only problem is part of what's going on is subdivisions that have already been approved and permits have already been done, and so it doesn't really necessarily count as new because it was already counted one
doesn't
time.
Show up.
Mm-hmm. Right,
it's just
but,
nice
but,
to
it's,
see
but it's at least active. Yeah, people are working.
I mean,
right.
Seeing new construction, that's
they
a good
built,
sign.
They so. Built the 4 new units in my neighborhood already, and there's another a fifth one's being built now.
Mm-hmm. Every time I look, there's a little house sticking, getting ready to be
still a great place to live.
It was a lot easier to find construction pictures just right here on this table.
Come to my house and look out my front door.
I always enjoy this report.
Is that neighbor
since
village
the first
right
year
there?
Plus a single family
that
home.
That is
no.
That's Augie's Alley, right next to Sycamore Square.
Straight behind CVS.
Yeah. And then I saw there was a new condo being built at the villages at Nahor there. So that's a brand new construction.
Yeah, there's 2 new duplexes. Yeah. One's finished, one's under construction, and there's a single family home under construction.
We have any
my subdivision.
Figures on how the sales are going right across
yeah,
the
Yeah, of the 3 across the county?
No. Across the subdivision that was just open across
Village Oaks, no. I know they've sold some because my son-in-law's actually sold some in there, but in my subdivision, Village of the Nahor, of the 4 new duplexes that have been built, 3 have already been sold. One is going to be used for a model, and then there's another single family under construction, and the lot next to it for a single family has already been sold too. Sorry.
Good.
And there's a lot of movement, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jay. Good report. CSA overview and budget summary, Dr. Myers.
What I thought I would do is kind of do a little overview of how the CSA program works, just so we're all on board with that, answer any questions, and then get into my budget summary. Child and Families brought CSA system through one of the agencies, and we've got the agencies that work with CSA, all the agencies that work with children, and you've got those listed there. And I've added at the bottom, or by parental referral. This is an issue being discussed at the state level, whether parents should be allowed to make self-referrals. We've always done that. Sometimes I get telephone calls, sometimes any of the case managers from these agencies may get calls. Those calls, after listening to what the issues the parents have, may get diverted. We might say, well, that doesn't need to go to CSA. It can be handled by the schools, or there's tutors in the schools, or there's this resource at social services, and divert those calls to those services before coming to CSA. But we've always allowed a parent, they say, no, I really would want to come to FAP. I would like the FAP team to hear what I'd like to request for my child. We've always allowed that. So families invited for a scheduled FAP meeting. The case manager, prior to the meeting, prepares these different documents, referral form, family service planning form, an assessment, basic forms that kind of have the information about the child, the family, the situation that's presented. They present the case with family present. That's the best practice at the state level, which is encouraged. All the families are invited to come to FAP. They're encouraged to have voice, to state what their view of what's going on in their family is, what services they would like to see happen, what they have done to try to help situations prior to coming to CSA. So they have a voice in the process. We make recommendations as to what services a child or their family might need, and then the FAP team votes, signs off, and that is the, what we consider to be a service approval. So that is the group, the team approves a service with the inclusion of the family's opinion. Once the service has been approved, it goes to the community policy management team, which is CPMT. Agency representative on CPMT, each of those different agencies that was listed on the form of the slide also have an agency representative on CPMT. They present the case to the team, the service and funding request is discussed. At the end of the meeting, we come out of closed session and we approve, we take votes, and then either that funding request is approved or denied. At that point, the service is now funded. So first we select a service, then we fund that service. Then the case manager contacts service providers to alert them that the service and the fund has been approved. They generate purchase orders and invoices. I sign off on them and they get them out to the vendors. And that's how we contract for services.
Hi, Jack, excuse me for stopping you. I think it's important for the board to know that the case manager stays with that particular individual while they are in, wherever they are. They
yes,
have
they
to
do.
Keep
and
up with
you
them.
Follow, they follow through.
They follow through and do all the reports. They visit them. They see that these vendors are doing what they're supposed to be doing for the child. So they have and some of them have a big caseload. It's a lot of work.
Caseload,
yeah. You have to go to court
and
with
also,
them.
And, if someone leaves a position or there's turnover, then the new case manager has all of the materials.
Right.
That comes with that child and family. So there's continuation.
Continuation.
A lot of discussion and training about what the family has received in terms of services and what their individual situations are. And in CSA, once a case is open, that case stays open and stays in my office until the child would age out of services. So after they turn 21 or 22 with their foster care and special ed, then those files might be stored. But in my office, the files are either current files or historic files. And historic files are files that might have been closed, but the child is young enough to still be eligible for CSA services and may very well be open. It might be a case that's reopened. And we would have those files go back to kind of see what services had been offered to the family and pursued in the past. These are examples of the types of services that we provide in CSA. And it's a very long list. There's a lot of breakdown within these categories, but it gives you kind of an overview of the kinds of things that we provide for children and their families. So now I'm going to the budget summary. And this admittedly was somewhat delayed because what we do are, from my office, from all the CSA offices, there are types of data dumps to the Office of Comprehensive Services, and they do a data analysis. And so when they do that, they feed us back information, and they had some things that they were doing to redesign their website, et cetera, and so this got kind of postponed, so we didn't get the information back until a little while ago. This is just what I've shown you in past years, the local match for Fluvanna County. Used to be across the board, then it was broken down into various categories, and you can see what the local match is. This just kind of tells you what a community-based service is. In community transition services would be services for a child coming out of a residential situation. And then you've got family foster care, and we have non-mandated services that are community-based. Residential services, what mandated categories those cover. And then we have other mandated. Specialized foster care will be a category that the Office of Comprehensive Services is doing away with as of July 1st. And that will, anything that would come under specialized foster care will now come under treatment foster care. Here's some demographics. I just wanted to show you kind of an overview. And then we have the unduplicated child count. As you can see, the total number of children being served is dropping somewhat. The other thing I wanted to point out here are trends, so that you get a little, this becomes more useful to you. What you're trying to do is look at the number of children served in each age category, and when we're doing really well, we're doing more services, serving more children at younger years. Mm-hmm. So there's more prevention, early intervention. So what you're trying to do is, of course, 18 to 21 years, you want that to drop. You want 13 to 17 years to drop. And then from 12 and younger, you want most of your services to go into children in that age category. In 2013, we went from 50 children served in the 13 to 17 years group, and it went to 22. And in 2014, it went from 37, and we had 28 in the 7 to 12 years. And you want that, again, you want your higher numbers to be on the lower end mm-hmm. and not on the higher end. And we've remained steady in the total number of children served for 2013 and 2014. This gives you an overview of the funding history. What you're seeing here is LOS's average length of stay. The average length of stay is dropping, and so far for 2015, now we have not gotten a whole year, about three quarters to look at, that number, the 222, is dropping even further. So that means we're not having children in residential treatment longer, you know, longer and longer and longer as time goes on. It's, we're cutting back, which again is the way you want this trend to go. What we are seeing is that the average cost per child, the total service days, average cost per day is going up. So the costs are going up. The numbers are dropping, but there are rate increases every year for most of our vendors, and we're starting to get in the vendor rate sheets, and we're seeing this come through now. So, you know, sometimes there was a time looking over the long history where vendors would increase rates every maybe 3 or 4 years. Now it's pretty much every year, every other year, rates are increasing. This gives you a comparison of the adopted budget to the actual expenditures. We are currently over encumbered again this year, and I probably will be coming back to you for a supplement so something to the CSA budget?
Ballpark?
I think we've got it down to about $300,000. At the retreat, we were at $400,000 with $250,000 on the invoices that had not been turned in, or that we had to examine to see if those funds could be unencumbered. So we are unencumbering money, but we haven't unencumbered it to the point that I would like. We also have some young people that are just now going into residential. When at this time of year, you really don't want kids to go in residential if you can help it, because the residential costs are higher, obviously, than the community-based services, and so you have this flood of money going towards residential placements. But we have had several residential placements in the even in this past 2 months.
Is that 300,000 total, or is that 300,000 county share?
It's total.
Okay, well, that's good, because what county share would be?
So I would go by the 38%, because that's the general, you know, that's the
so 100,000.
Yeah, but now with these residentials, that's going to throw it up, because what you're doing is you're encumbering them.
Even 150 is a lot better than 300.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. I'm doing what I can.
Indeed.
Going back just two slides, just for clarification. So if you look at 2013 and then you look at 2014, the numbers are very similar in terms of the count. Obviously, the average day cost is higher, but the average LOS days is lower. And I guess the question would be, if they're almost identical budgets, you know, difference of $17,000 or something along those lines, why would this year result in an under versus the other year an over? Does that make sense? Like, what's the difference?
Those are just budget figures.
Right, so but the actual expenditure for serving 101 children for 235 average days at a cost of $58 was $1,900,000, right?
Remember, the average cost per child is the average cost per child is not a really good number, because it breaks out, it lumps everybody in together.
Uh-huh.
And the average cost per child for foreign residential could be really, really high, but everybody else may be really low. So the averages on here are really...
So going back to your previous, which I took the point that you were making about the trend lines, it might be helpful to adopt kind of what are the placements, if you would, for each of those categories in that age grouping bracket that you had, because that might also help to predict potential trend lines in terms of whether or not you have to place somebody into more expensive programs.
Except that every time we've done those numbers since I've been here, there has been no trend.
Which is kind of odd.
Why don't you go back up to the age one? I mean, you can see how consistent. Keep going now. One more.
I want to look at that chart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, you went past it. Right now, keep going.
Keep going. Right there.
Right there.
So, I mean, you can see that the numbers are not terribly inconsistent from year to year in the age categories.
Right.
And the types of services vary year to year depending on, I mean, the cost of the services vary year to year depending on how much residential there is. And one residential in a year can be $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 by itself. And so
just the residential that throws it off.
Right. And so let me show you this one. If you go to that slide, the blue is what's been budgeted over the last five years. If you look before that, because Jackie's got this back for about 15 years, I think, since you got here, 13, 14 years ago. But you can see the numbers are pretty consistent. The reason that 2012 blipped up is because there was a big case, or two, I think, that year that were just unexpected, and so we had to go find more money. But we're running right close to the margins on all this every year when you're talking multi-millions of dollars here.
Sure.
This next budget year, same way. We I think you all left $200,000 increase off this year. And if there's no unexpected big residential cases, then you might be okay. But CPMT looks at this really carefully to try to find out if there's any patterns with the kids, if there's any new services they need to put in place, if there's any trends that they can adjust and
move services into this pot because it helps preclude the stuff having to go over here. And so the CPMT does a lot of that as a group. That's not the case level management, that's higher level management.
Gotcha.
Looking at the child demographics chart, what would be the use of that chart? What does that say? Other than just the number of children?
Can you know what I'm saying? Answer that honestly?
It's required by the state. Yeah. Because
I personally don't like this uh-huh. because I think it infers things. You could make inferences to this that I don't like.
Uh-huh.
Well, you can tell that boys are more of a problem than girls.
I noticed that.
But everybody knows that, yeah. So.
But maybe
if you saw 200 African American kids in 2014, and you know, maybe that's saying something, but it's really isn't, because the children are the children. whatever they need, and they're inside the same house. And you think that it's not only about 200 and some black kids maybe in the high school, you know, you think of it, 300 or 400 out of the 1,300. But it's just, you know, these are just our children state want to know. Okay.
Yeah, and we don't need to put the demographics here. Yeah. We just have to report them to the state.
One quick question.
I just remember something just struck me a second ago. The chart, the other number chart. These are just the new kids, or are these every child that's being served?
In that year.
No, these are all the kids that receive services.
Okay, these are all the ones that receive services.
In whatever year.
But they're only counted once. They're only counted once in a year.
Mm-hmm. Once each year.
Yeah. Right.
Like especially.
So it might be that, you know, some of these, they're not necessarily the entire year. Some get services for less than a year, and then others.
Hopefully 30 days.
It turns.
Some for multiple years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some are multiple years, some are 6 months. It really varies.
Okay, and Jackie, you have the next report too. If there are any other questions, strategic initiative update.
You've got copies of the plan in front of you there.
Mm-hmm.
We really want to try to get some updates from all of you.
What I'm going to do is exactly what I've done in the past, which is just to draw your attention towards the updates to some things you've seen before. 1A, the economic development plan, 50% completed. It's in progress. Obviously, after it's completed, it'll be finished. Mr. Nichols, would you like to speak to 1B?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out how to set that up, but part of the plan to set up the business meeting with business owners is trying to figure out and maybe mimic what some other counties doing, but how do we set up a business and entrepreneur focus and some type of appreciation program. The chamber does some stuff, but there's just as many movement on it. So we're looking for ideas and trying to steal ideas from other counties or figure out something to start, but we don't have.
I recognize the chamber does an effort there, and maybe you know, in the same way, I don't know that we can do it, but one idea would be, you know, spotlight a business on our website. I mean, that's
sure, and it is on the website all the time because it's in my reports, and my reports get published, and they're always all on the website. But I don't have it. I can pull it up here, but I don't have it here readily tonight. There are three things that are kind of cooking that support all this. We're in the process of trying to develop a separate economic development / business website that will link to ours, but has specific information on there and functions and focus.
And Louisa County has one similar to that.
Pardon?
I believe several other counties.
Yeah, we're mimicking lots of what's out there to try to expand ours out a little bit. So we've already purchased the web addresses that are suitable for that, like Fluvanna Business, Business Fluvanna, Visit Fluvanna. We already own those web domains. And then the second one would be the tourism website, again, that will link to our things. We've got a lot of rack cards we've already done. I don't think he left one here for you tonight, but Kelly, are there rack cards up front, the Pleasant Grove House ones?
I think there's some.
I want to make sure that board gets one if he left some here. The Parks and Rec put together the new rack card for the Pleasant Grove House and Museum. You know, really nice, the glossy paper, double-sided, that we put in brochures around. But there's so many different ways to do this, and I've got this long list of the taskers. There are nine taskers to this project, and we'll bring that back to the board, but I'm trying to vet it through with the staff. I've gone through it with Mr. Popowitz now that he's back, and with the other staff. But part of that would be developing a recognition program. We don't have a recognition program for volunteers in our county. We don't have a recognition program for anybody that does anything good in our county. We don't have a recognition program for staff to come to board. We don't have a recognition program for businesses. Mm-hmm. Most organizations have some way to do some recognition for somebody. So if a firefighter, you know, saves somebody's life in a fire, you know, they can do whatever they want through the fire association, mm-hmm. but there ought to be some recognition from the locality.
Right.
You know, if a sheriff's deputy, you know, does a heroic, some type of heroic thing, there ought to be some recognition from, I mean, different organizations do recognitions, but there's no county government thing. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice if we had some county government programs for business recognition, community efforts, volunteer efforts, those kinds of things, businesses, and made it fairly simple, but also, and fairly easy to access through our website, but fairly consistent. And we just don't have anything. So
seems, and to those ideas, I mean, so certainly it seems like we could probably create a, you know, once a month program, you know, recognizing this and advertising both, you know, the papers, and I suspect that we could probably get the cable channel at the lake to maybe recognize some of that as a potential. Also worth talking to them.
Yeah.
Create a program, and again, that just recognition in the community and thanks and, you know, right. Just people, well, saying, hey,
because there isn't anything, that's what I do in my brief to the board all the time, and that gets sent to all staff members and it gets published on the web, so at least things are out there, but there just hasn't been anything formal, and
right.
Frankly, there's just been too many tasks on the list to try to get everything done, but
sure.
It's the direction we're heading, because we ought to be able to have, you know, an annual recognition for Volunteer of the Year, Ms. Carter Johnson's working on that with me. But we ought to have an annual recognition for local business for outstanding efforts or something besides what the chamber does. We ought to be able to recognize a staff member for a special action. Now, I'm not talking about the staff awards and recognition program. I'm talking like a firefighter or a sheriff's office person. 3 years ago, there was a deputy that saved somebody's life in an accident. And there was,
yeah,
you know, there may have been some recognition from someplace, but there wasn't any from the county. But we ought to have programs in place like that are relatively easy to do. But the business is just one piece of that. So there's a nine-tasker project that I've got that I wrote up, and the staff will be implementing that. But part of that is to have the local business meeting we talked about for the Corridor 250 project, and also for these kinds of things to do recognitions. We need input from
maybe one of our work sessions. We can invite chamber representatives to sit down and meet with us to brainstorm on these ideas as well, too.
Yeah, the work sessions, the board work sessions, don't lend themselves very well to that. It's not quite free flowing enough where you can get up and go do stuff. And so I would almost rather have a separate, like a
treat.
Saturday morning work session at the library where you can, you know, get up on the boards and post stuff. And mm-hmm. So that's part of that task list I've got for the staff. But doing it here face-to-face as a work session with the board is a little structured.
Sure. No, it doesn't have to be here. Saturday program sounds like a good idea. So
anyway, that's why that one's still kind of blank, because we just haven't advanced very far yet. But anyway, you can go on to the rest of them, Jackie.
Okay, the tourism guide, the draft is completed, near completed. You're going to be receiving a copy. It's going to be distributed to department heads. We're just trying to get feedback on that, so we'll be working on that. 1D, this has not moved forward very much. VDOT study of infrastructure plan, we haven't heard much back. So what's happened is they've been contacted and we're trying to expedite the study.
Well, but that's really the minor part of it, the VDOT. That's just one piece of this long thing. The next step in this is the future of Flavanna's 250 corridor community meeting, you know, up at Zion Crossroads, to get businesses, landowners, realtors in to sit down and talk about, you know, where we think the future of that corridor is going to be. you can look at examples all up and down 250 and all up and down 64 and find ideas, and you're going to have landowners that are, you know, still be in the hell no, I'm not selling mold until they find out that, oh, by the way, there's some money to be had potentially. Or you're going to find some that are dying to do something but don't even know where to start. They're going to find some that haven't heard anything about the site development studies, site readiness studies. But there's a fair amount of significant movement already occurring. Sure. And Mr. Popowitz will give you an update later on that tonight. But
so we are moving toward getting these people
without question. Together. That's part of that 9-person tasker. So
good, yeah. Good. It's just I want to bring up tonight.
There's only about 575 things on everybody's plate, and it's just so hard to get them all done at one time. But it's all in that way. I've got. Mm-hmm. I'll show you when we get to closed session this tasker list. But yes, it is underway. It is in process.
Okay, I'll draw your attention to 2C. Mm-hmm. We did the annual report, and that information is available. And in that process, collected facts, statistics, etc., from each department that participated. But the original task was to establish baseline performance measures. And we felt like we need further definition from the board as to what's meant by baseline performance measure and how that would be determined.
And this was a Mike Chandler thing. Mike, whenever he does these strategic planning sessions with boards, does the same one in everybody's. I've looked at other websites and he did the exact same one. But there are some things that lend themselves to a core service measurement, like, you know, how many
response times?
Response times for fire or rescue or sheriffs or whatever, or how many passport applications did the office process? We've got a lot of that data that's in the report that's mm-hmm. built in, and it'll be updated next year, next year, next year.
So think you've already done it?
Well, okay. It really depends. If you want something, if you want a 20-item report card that can be published on the website that has red, yellow, and green and shows, you know, whether we're meeting the standard mm-hmm. or not, we've got to figure out what the standard is and then kind of report on it. But we're not a widget factory, and so you don't have quite the same things. But Public Works doesn't respond to citizen complaints because Public Works doesn't do things for citizens.
It may need to be more sort of a higher level overview in terms of not a specific metric for a particular core service, but specific objective for a range that we consider, mm-hmm. you know, to be a good guideline for the county involved, right? So, because a lot of this stuff could be made very subjective, mm-hmm. and obviously
indeed,
once the funding is a part of it, then that discussion comes up, and I think that establishing baseline performances, setting that out as county goals and objectives, similar to the same way that when you put together a comprehensive plan, lays out kind of the plan for the county, can be used as a similar model, if you would, to sort of say, hey, we recognize the value of these core services overall, and so we think that we should be at least achieving this set of guidelines within, you know, how rural counties operate.
Right, but see, I can understand that nebulous kind of discussion.
Percentage of calls run, the percentage missed, rather than response. I mean, response times are going to vary because different. I mean, we get toned out to go to Fieldstone, which is 18 miles from Kent's door.
Sure.
You know, our response time is going to be a long time to get there.
And I think it's more of a piece that helps both staff and citizens understand challenges.
Well, I've done lots of research on counties all around the nation because I've been pulling stuff all over for the annual report and for trying to figure this out. I've had this notion since I've been here to try to create a dashboard on our website that shows kind of indicators of where we're at for various stuff. I've used it in every organization I've ever been in. I'm not clicking on this one yet, and I haven't heard anything yet that really clicks with me.
Any other county with this objective have solved it?
No. I mean, I can find counties that have some dashboard stuff for certain things. I can go to annual reports from counties that show, that they wanted to have no more than X, Y per this period. but a lot of them are kind of cheesy.
Ask Michael Chandler to give you the model.
Well, Michael will give me the same cheesy stuff, unfortunately. He's a good guy and knows his stuff inside out. But
he hasn't memorized.
It really requires
Cooper Center, anything?
Some work from you all to understand that. Maybe some input from citizens and some more work by staff.
Have they reached out to VACO or the Cooper Center on?
I pulled all their stuff up.
Why are we wrestling with something that we're not clear about? How can we make it clear?
That's exactly why it's marked in yellow on here, because
we're sitting here trying to come up with goals and ideas for something that
rewrite it.
Yeah, I mean, if this were a widget factory, it'd be easy. You'd have clear goals. You'd want to have, you know, quality control of this, and fewer accidents per shift, and you know, if you're a hospital, you want, you know, fewer nosocomial infections and fewer patient falls and greater surgical outcomes. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do like that. Mm-hmm. In a service organization like ours, it's not quite as clear. And that's why I'm still struggling with it, and we just haven't got over the hump yet.
Unfortunately, get through the year with no one getting injured.
I think you could come up with
on staff,
the firemen, or then the rescue squad.
Here's a good example. For county government, does it make sense to us to have a metric that we try to make sure that no firefighter or rescue squad person gets hurt during the year?
We've had people that have died.
I don't disagree, Mr. Sheridan, but I mean, within the fire company or fire companies, those are definitely things that should be managed and tracked. Chief Pullen's looking at things like that. Those are really important, but would it be something that would be put on the county website where we have that? Let's assume we track that. What do we do with it when somebody does happen? I mean, you do an after action, you do a, you know, do a rundown on it. That's why we're struggling with it.
Right.
It's still complicated. I'm not quite sure how to attack it, but in sequence of all these things, a lot have been accomplished, some are in process, some are still kind of gelling.
Right.
And they may have to be carried over to the following year. But that's my muddy story, and I'm sticking to it.
3B, with regards to the comprehensive plan, last time we did a report, it said that it was projected for June, July, now we're saying July, August, so I think we lost a little bit.
Can't get that planning commission to do their job.
Well, you know, and that's
another. It's a lot of work.
We've been waiting on the proffer stuff for a little over a year now.
Yeah.
We've been waiting on planning commissions. I mean, comp plan for a little over a year now. We've been waiting on barking dog guidance. We've been waiting on the special SUP. We've been waiting on this. Thing is, I can come up with a list of 20 things we're waiting on because we keep adding more stuff to the list. And there's only so much that staff can get done at one time. So we really have to be careful about prioritizing what's most important.
Who's adding those things to the list? Tell them stop.
Elected officials with great ideas. But I that's why I want to remind you regularly, be careful about adding too much to the stack, because I'd rather do 5 things really well than 10 things halfway. So. So that one is in good progress, and we've had lots of community meetings. It's going, and you're going to be pleased with the result compared to what the old comp plan was, because it's actually going to be readable and much smaller and more discreet and easy to get through.
Okay,
we'll move to 3C. We have worked on some fact sheets. What we need some guidance about is what other types of topics would the board supervisors like developed. We have a few suggestions here, but there may be others.
Yeah, so when you hear from citizens confusion about something, you know, your discussion about what can you do if you're a subdivision. Now, that's a pretty discreet thing, and I'm not sure you want to develop a general thing to hand out to, you know, for 40 people, but maybe something to work with them on. But are there topics of things that have some confusion in the community? And clearly one of them that's coming up is revenue recovery. We're going to have a big marketing effort. There'll be brochures. There'll be question and answers. The James River Water Authority, there'll be question and answers on our website as that goes forward now, so that people have some place to go to. But, you know, economic development infrastructure roadmap. But what other things are there as they come up that we should be developing sheets on? It's clearly part of the process we hope to do, but we need to know ideas from all of you, too.
Okay, I got everything right there.
3D,
Before you leave that, is there a typo in
it's supposed to be leash,
dog
not
leash.
Leash?
Not dog lease.
Oh, yeah. I was going to lease one.
Yeah.
I thought it was L-E-I-S-H. I thought it was like leishmaniasis or something. There you go, leash. Figures. We need a lawyer to fix our leash.
Huh? PE teacher.
Okay, we need a PE teacher.
That's
great. It works.
This is Vanna County video that we've gotten some materials together from the Mark Vanna campaign, so that's being developed in some way. 4A, refinance has been approved, but the policy development is in progress.
So this was a Chandlerism again. You know, develop a fiscal policy for the account inclusive of a debt management and debt reduction strategy. Well, we've talked debt a lot in the last year and a half. I'm not seeing any move towards debt reduction strategy other than trying to refinance our debt and things, but do you want a policy developed such that we're going to more closely live with our debt policies, like not to exceed 12% or 18% or whatever, we're 20 now, or do you want something like work done on a formal board adopted plan to set aside additional funds to more quickly pay off debt. Mm-hmm. If we don't want those kinds of things, then we need to kind of set that aside and not fiddle with it too much, because you already have fiscal policies that are pretty solid. Yeah.
But we're talking about the finance board, which also...
No. Finance board would be separate of this. Okay. Finance board is for investments.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I think we could talk about setting money aside and having it accumulate and stuff like that. But other than that, I don't know what else you could do.
Gotta be pretty serious about it if you want us to write a policy on it.
I don't think it's very much else you can do.
I think the challenge there is you're coming off of multiple years of a difficult time for the county, and a lot of efforts are being made.
And I don't think you need to put any more restraints or whatever, or too many things in it to...
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily now either, but I don't want to just... I don't want to walk away from a part of our strategic plan that still has some meat left on the bone. If it doesn't have a lot of meat left on the bone, then we'll move through it at the end of this calendar year, and you'll cross it off your list and either add it to next year when you do next strategic plan
next
in
year item, because we'll have a lot of pieces
because
in place.
And new board members potentially.
We don't need to build any more restraints.
It's a valid concern, and it's something that we need to start looking at. But
it is a valid concern, but right now we just don't have any extra to put in.
We don't have that, and we don't want to curtail ourselves by limiting
limit what you can do.
Some of the things that we're trying to accomplish right now, which are core.
Go ahead.
And 4B?
4B, part of the work is completed, part of the multi-phase recommendations that are included in the preliminary engineering report. The RFP for the countrywide, countywide the water and sewer service plan, that's a tongue twister, will be advertised once the design crossroads is underway, and the budget can be more accurately predicted. So that's a piece of some additional information that has brought.
You'll get some updates on that stuff in your work session on the 20th, too.
And then 4E, the EMS cost recovery was included in the FY16 budget. Increase in vehicle license fees, other potential revenue sources have been identified, and then pretty much there's just been some other things that have been thrown around discussion and need to be further discussed and explored to see if they're viable for the community.
So now I can tell you what's happening. EMS is moving forward. You'll have all that stuff as it comes forward. Now we're going to be coming forward to your next meeting with a recommendation for the billing company. You'll get policy documents in the coming weeks.
Are we still looking at June, July, or
we probably won't be till summertime sometime, but it'll be retroactive to July 1st. So you'll start collecting July 1st, but you may not actually start the billing process until August 1st or September 1st. But it'll be from July 1st.
Right.
But large part of that work is done. So you'll have another revenue source that you've already approved. You still have to approve the specific billing processes and stuff. But the vehicle license fee, we won't relook at that until summer and fall to see what it would potentially bring us if we did some tiered approach. So you can adjust that, you can address that during your budget season next year. But the other things, meals tax, business license fee, et cetera, I'm not doing anything on until the board decides they want to move and do something on it. Because we've looked at it and looked at it and looked at it. We know which way, we know things about it, but there's not much sense in us churning our wheels much more often, much more, until the board decides they want us to get serious about it and do something with it. So now you still, both the community development director and the commissioner of revenue, we're supposed to be coming back to you budget season.
Excuse me, Steve, do we have 8 o'clock for this meeting?
We can still count as 4 hours, even though we didn't start till 6.
10-6?
Probably, because we opened up at 4.
Yeah, because the meeting technically started at 4.
Okay, so do we need to extend?
Somebody can make a motion.
I'll make a motion to extend this meeting until 10.
Okay. All right, move by Mr. Second. Sheridan and second by Mr. O'Brien. We extend the meeting until 10. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes
that.
Okay.
The board had asked the Commissioner of Revenue and Community Development Director to come back after budget season to do that. I would suggest sometime after the June filing deadline, and we can get them to come back and discuss the couple things that you talked about before. The potential for business license fee and the relative effort to put that in place. And secondly, the approach of the tax approach of, I just lost my train of thought. What was the other tax thing we were going to look at from?
Meals tax, you mentioned meals tax, but that's a referendum.
No, this was about regular taxes, about restructuring property tax, or, I don't know, I've got it in my note.
Vehicle license.
No, not the vehicle license fee. Just a second, I'll pull it up. But anyway, so if you want more work on those things, we definitely need to get some guidance from the board if you want us to continue on that track. Let me pull it up here quick. I don't have it here. I pulled up some of it. The board specifically asked about, and the Commissioner of Revenue talked about something about taxes, either personal property or real estate taxes, on a different way to look at it, or a different way to...
Oh, it was something about the guys out of 20 years. I know that was one thing we talked about.
Could be.
Extending for the lifetime of the piece of equipment rather than ending...
That's right. It was on the equipment stuff, on the tax issue that way. So those things you probably ought to look at, because those may be just tweaks in our policy, and I would suggest you do that this summer before you get to budget season. So if you want any formal effort done, meals tax, business license fee, those other tax things, or on vehicle license fee, we really need direction from the board.
I think we should continue to preserve vehicle license, and we should continue, I personally think, we should be looking at the business license fee now as well too. I mean, I think that's important for the county's future. Whether we enact it today or not, we should understand what it means. That's my opinion.
Okay. Rest of the board?
Yes.
Okay. That's two.
Well, I'm not a big fan of that one, but two works today. Is there any but three?
Okay. Good point.
All over that.
And that was business equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Equipment. And meals tax, yes or no? I mean, it requires a referendum. You've got to get it on the ballot.
I think so.
It's either we're either going to look at it quick for this year's ballot, or it's the following year.
That's it. Let's
following
year. Yeah.
Okay.
Following.
So meals tax, no. And... Okay. By the way, the revised numbers on EMS cost recovery, again, first blush, based on the types of people we have, the types of insurance we have, the length of the trips to the hospitals, the gross estimate from the billing company would be in the $700,000 to $800,000 range annually.
Okay.
And then that, well, Cheryl's not here. Okay. And I don't think that included all the mileage reimbursement, which is significant too. Okay. So could be.
And the financial review board.
Pardon?
The financial review board.
So it didn't include mileage reimbursement.
Okay. The ordinance change will come next meeting for the financial review board, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, and your May 20th meeting, you've got the VIP ordinance be approved so that you can get in the VIP pool. So, mm-hmm. I think I sent you all, or some of you, an update from the VIP. They do a periodic update on their investments and mm-hmm. stuff.
So. Personally, yeah. I think it's helpful in the budget, in the five-year budget plan, which is one of the strategic initiatives that it's done now. Great job there to see those additional revenue sources and the potential impact so that the county has some sense of what that could do, and the public as well, too.
And that's something that maybe early on in budget season next year, before we even develop all the department budgets, like in October-ish time frame, Eric, we ought to be looking at the five-year plan on what things you want projected into the out years, because it's hard to do those after the fact on the fly, and I'd much rather know up front on what kinds of things we want to include. Whether we include dollars for there or not, I really want to put the placeholders there on things we're talking about. So we'll do that as a work session or at a board meeting, maybe as an unfinished business from last budget season later on this summer, so we can get some guidance from the board.
Okay, so Ms. Jackie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I need to go back to back up with the report that Jay gave on page 25. The residential activities of Fluvanna Luisa Housing Foundation. It has, as of July 1, 2012, Fluvanna County no longer provides funding to the Fluvanna Luisa Housing Foundation.
Yeah, we've refunded those.
We have refunded that. So if we could correct
Jay, I mean, Jason, there's that line right in the middle there.
Right.
That was a one-year thing, but we need to correct it.
We have been.
We fund it now.
And even if we know, we give them $18,000, $16,000 or $18,000.
Right.
And if you look at the services that they contribute to the county, and I'm on that board, and Kim Mabe, and a minister from Antioch Church, she's new, that a lot of service comes into Fluvanna from that $18,000.
Right, and that's why the board decided to put the money back against it after that one kind of anomaly year. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's the only affordable housing things that that we have. It was something else in the report, I couldn't find it, that when he talked about the fire thing, we deferred it. We didn't, I don't know if it was talking about last month, we didn't defer the Lake Monticello request.
No, that got approved.
Yeah,
They proffered out multifamily homes, and you approved it.
Yeah,
and then
we need to look for that. I saw it, I just didn't write it down. That it looked like his report says something different.
The minutes actually have it. We'll get to the minutes in a minute.
No, but I know the minutes. I'm talking about Jay's report.
Oh.
Something different. Anyway, I'll find it and I'll pay you. Okay. I may be wrong. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Next thing we have is Public Works Project Update. Mr. Wayne Stevens, our Public Works Director and County Engineer.
Good evening. I'll give you a little update on some of the things we've been working on so far this fiscal year. And
don't come into my building because it's a mess.
I know.
It is a mess right now.
But it's going to be a really nice mess when it's done.
Yes.
Probably seen this once before in the previous update on the project. You know, some color coding. Green items at the top are things that are already completed, which is the phase one hydrogen lighting study. The library lighting improvements, which I believe were actually finished yesterday afternoon. Got a couple of pictures of those I'll show you later. Carrybrook field lighting electrical improvements were done fairly early on in the fiscal year.
It's not quite as shocking a game downer anymore.
They've been working very well. And, the things that we've got at the bottom there that are in orange are ones that are basically currently on hold that we put on hold earlier for budgetary reasons, and basically they're all still on hold, at least for now.
I thought the streetscape is moving forward, isn't it?
The ones in the middle
right.
are the ones that I'm going to cover, particularly the highlighted ones I'm going to cover because other two underway in blue are water issues with soil or sewer, which we're going to cover 2 weeks from now. Here's some of the operations and maintenance funded projects. We have had new HVAC controls installed in this building a little bit earlier in the year. As you've probably been, if you drive around the county, seeing some of the signage that we put up throughout the year. That's both in Cary York and Fort Union, and then the completed larger sign at Pleasant Grove. We did some electrical service improvements at Pleasant Grove earlier for the stage, which I don't have that on my list, but technically it was a Parks and Rec project, but Works was involved in it. In any case, that's complete, and we've got a new electric service at the stage. We've also got a new electric service down in a low area in front of the Pleasant Grove House that allows a temporary stage to be set up. That's been used successfully a couple of times.
It's fantastic.
It was also used on the Earth Day activities on the 25th, which I think it may not be official break-in, but I think it was the official break-in for the new stage as well. I believe that was the first time it's been used for it. And the one in the back was used, the new stage in the back. We used the budget money to get the leaks repaired in the elevator shaft admin building. The leaks are greatly reduced. They are not gone, so we'll probably have to put a little more money into that at some future date. The flooring repairs in the admin building, that small amount of money's more or less just been folded into the larger upgrades that we're doing from the capital side. And then relocating the generator, we've done some of the repairs at the sidewalks at the public safety building, mainly doing sealing up the edges of the handicap ramp where water was seeping in and causing concrete to crack. We have not done the generator relocation yet. We're still coordinating with the sheriff as to exactly where he wants it and, or at this point, even whether they want to have it moved. For the Forks Union Street Pit project, it is underway. It's been underway for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Our contractor is S. Walker. Mm-hmm. As y'all already know, the project's VDOT grant funded. They're basically replacing the curb gutter sidewalk and sidewalk on the west side of Route 15 from the post office, mm-hmm. a little bit north of the post office, down to Academy Road. We're also adding two handicap ramps on the sidewalks. Now, those will be done on both sides of the road mm-hmm. with crosswalks, and we're improving the crosswalk on Route 6 as well. And of course, street lights are going along the new sidewalk.
And I spoke to that lady, to Mrs. Booker.
You did?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I informed Mr. Student.
Good.
Here are some pictures from early on, when they started, that these guys did not waste any time.
They sure did.
So far, they've been an excellent contractor. Excellent. They keep a tidy work site. They do very good work. One of the better concrete contractors that I've ever seen anywhere, to be honest with you. What you see here is just a shot looking north from more or less on the corner. Next one is a new driveway entrance for the house that's next to the post office. We've got a shot looking south at where the sidewalk terminates as of yesterday, and then a new storm drain inlet, which looks fairly simple, but was actually a relatively complicated concrete pour to do under the ground. It's not a standard VDOT storm drain inlet. It's kind of had to customize to retrofit to an existing manhole, which as you can see is getting leaked in back there behind the curb. This is a little bit of demolition that was going on late in April, and then a couple more pictures from just a day or so ago. New entrance is at the historic house that's next to the gas station, and then mm-hmm. also at the gas station. That final picture there is standing in the new entrance from the post office looking north to the terminus of the project. So you can see it actually goes about another 100 feet mm-hmm. north of the side of the post office. Our building renovation and space utilization plan, which grew basically from an effort to try to improve the MACA building. And from there, it went to finding a better place for MACA, because the building that we're in is actually better used as a maintenance shop. And then we started getting into other renovations and other moves and things like that. But basically, the buildings and facilities that are affected by this overall renovation plan are the Perry Brook Gymnasium, the basement area, which is complete. We did some work in the community center to build a new pottery studio and also to build new offices or renovate office space for use by the extension service, and then also the remaining Parks and Rec staff. Mm-hmm. They've got a little bit smaller space, but yeah. It's actually nice.
I was surprised how nice that room was.
One note, I told you two or three meetings ago about the potential for high quality industrial grade but used equipment, kitchen equipment from Jabba, who's mm-hmm. closing down their restaurant at Jefferson Center now.
Yeah,
Jefferson Center.
They're closing that.
Something in town.
Yeah, they're
towns,
closing the cafe.
The restaurant, the cafe.
Yeah.
And we got some prices on that today, so I'll be bringing that to the board sometime. Originally they talked about $32,000 to outfit the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Some of these things are way, 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 way lower than that. And I'm not sure the board is going to want to chip in on that, but maybe some donations, maybe a little bit from the board. There might be a way to do it much less expensively than what was originally planned. So I'm just working with Mr. Thompson to solidify those numbers because he got the quotes back from the from Java today.
And as far as that goes, that kitchen area, the renovation of the kitchen, is the last phase of the work. Mm-hmm. Everything else is complete.
Right.
The cafe's only been open like 2 years.
The cafe, yeah. The cook is not very old, but they're going to use some of it in some of their other facilities.
Sure.
And so not all of it was available.
I think Piedmont's Culinary Arts School is right down, and they were sharing something with them.
Yes, that's right.
But they weren't making it.
But there's still a significant amount they would be willing to sell to us at a pretty good price. And those are about 8 or 10 items I went through today, and I think at about $8,000, but things that normally cost many thousands of dollars more than that. So,
the additional buildings are in effect are basic level of Treasures building.
Yeah.
Doing relatively minor renovations there.
Removing the bars.
IT's going in there.
Removing the bars.
Those will stay because those are actually good for our server and safe storage.
Maybe locking the server into one of the cells.
Or
the IT director into one of the cells.
Yeah, the IT director.
The MACA building, which is also known as the maintenance shop, and I guess here before it should be known as the maintenance shop because MACA is now in the basement of the gymnasium. And then the two small brick buildings, whose official names I actually don't know. I mean, one of them I know was the original clerk's office, and the gentleman apparently built it himself next to the courthouse.
I've got all the information on that, on what his name was and when he did it, because he paid for it himself.
But in any case, those are basically one or two room buildings currently being used as office space. They don't have restrooms in them. Mm-hmm. They're really expensive to operate on a
everyday
basis as far as the number of people mm-hmm. that you can fit in. So we're finding new office space for all the people that work in those buildings.
And end up being community meeting rooms where people can check out the keys for those buildings, and there'll be mm-hmm. conference table and there are a dozen chairs or so. Perfect, instead of somebody getting the keys for the admin building or something else, they check those out and then drop them back through the window at the public works right next door. So much better community meeting.
The idea is to operate them similar to the way we do the historic courthouse now, where we're also going to be using. It'll hopefully improve the security in the admin building as well by lessening the use of the Morris Room by outside agencies and whatnot after hours. In any case, the expenditures are being tracked separately within their individual CIP and MR and maintenance and replacement budgets. But there's basically multiple budgets that stuff is coming from. I already showed you the $4,000 from the O&M part. Here's the big kickers, if you will, that are funding this project, this money. The CIP money that was put towards the original MAC building renovation, the administration building HVAC and interior improvement CIP, which I think asbestos we were able to turn was originally
2010 or
2010.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the admin building exterior repairs, maintenance, replacement, renewal, which was funded a couple of years ago.
Wow.
No, last year, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's ongoing now, and they're doing a great job out there, it looks like to us.
Yeah.
Here's a chart that gives basically the the items that are being done. If there's a check mark or words, it means there's that particular type of work is being done. If there's just a dash, it means that it's, for the most part, not. The green checks are completed items. The black ones are things that are either being worked on right now or are pending. As you can see, the work is complete in the basement of the gymnasium. Mac has already moved in.
It's beautiful.
They actually already got burglarized once, so I guess that's officially
it's a lot better than what they were in.
You're right. Oh, and I love the signs. I think Ink did those. It makes you look like you're going in a real store.
Yeah.
I do have a bit of a mistake in the community center because I have the kitchen on there, and I should have that as a second item, a second row that is not yet complete. Mm-hmm. But everything else, room 7 is the new pottery room. The main offices are done. The kitchen.
The pottery room is over at the community center.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh,
you go to the front, you turn left.
Sure.
To the back corner classroom.
Yeah,
and
right.
It'll be the right-hand classroom as you get to the end of the hall.
Right, okay.
The admin building, kind of divided that up. Second and third floor hallways, we're getting ceiling grids and tiles and lighting. I don't know when the last time I did, we were in the admin building, but that is all in place right now. HVAC improvements are underway. All of the office spaces listed there on those four lines are currently more or less underway. The very first step we have to do is asbestos abatement of asbestos flooring. And that started today. So,
but we're very sad to be losing our window air conditioner. So.
We're doing what?
We're very sad to be losing our window air conditioner.
Oh.
But that's more or less what we expect to have to do with these buildings. If any surprises come up, well, you'll probably find out because I'll probably have to come back to you a little bit more. But and here's the chart of the office relocations.
Okay.
By department or agency, it gives their old location, the new location, and the status. As you can see, MACA is in the gymnasium, Pottery Studio is in the community center, Cooperative Extension has moved from the third floor of the admin building to the community center. The buildings and grounds people who currently maintain an office in the Treasures building basement will be moving to that old MACA building.
Okay.
We're going to be converting it into a shop and office space for building and grounds. Finance department is going to move into what was the extension offices. They have a lot more interaction with the commitment.
Right.
County administrator's office than just about any other department. So having them right next to them is probably is a good move.
But I'll gain 20. I'll gain 20 pounds from not walking up and down the stairs.
That's what I'm saying.
5,000 times during budget season.
No, Jackie and CSA is going to move from that clerk's office to an office in what is currently the finance department.
Okay.
The IT folks are going to move into the basement of the treasury. Which is a more secure building than this was here.
Who's and under then, the fire where the fire department was? Did you say that?
That's storage.
Yeah, that's actually slated to eventually be more organized storage.
Okay.
Organized storage.
Right, I've been
dry storage.
It's not even organized chaos now.
Dry storage.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Dry and organized storage.
Yeah, okay.
And then, of course,
it's terrible now.
The emergency services coordinator is going to move down to the second floor as well into what was formerly the finance area. And the office that she's in right now is basically going to be converted into a space for when Kelly needs to transcribe ordinance and things. It needs to be where it's quiet and that she can work. And then also there will be a desk, phone, terminal available for supervisors.
And when we get our deputy county administrator, he can move in there, or she.
Here's some pictures down at the community center. First sign, everybody's new.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to leave it out. Java actually had their area renovated as well as part of this. It's a relatively small area, so they're able to fit it in with very little extra expense.
Mm-hmm.
The top right is the renovated Parks and Recreation office, where two people share that office space. Bottom left and bottom right are the renovated extension offices from two different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And then top left is the new pottery studio shooting down the wall looking towards the kiln and the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And put some new cabinetry in the pottery studio.
That's nice.
They've already got a lot of stuff moved in there, but behind those cardboard boxes is a large utility sink, which they need. one thing you need for a pottery studio. I mean, you can't see it in the picture, unfortunately. And then there's a renovated storage area that Java uses for some of their stuff, and then the renovated Java office. Mm-hmm. The admin building, third floor hallway. I don't know if you remember what the old lights looked like. They're
yes.
fluorescents, and there were a lot more of them running down the string. These are LEDs that provide actually better, brighter light and a lot less money. Yeah. Second floor hallway looks virtually the same as that.
How much do those lights cost?
I had to get, I believe total workshop probably $500 installed.
For each one?
Including, and then of course, we also did the ceiling grid and the ceiling tiles.
Good looking lights.
And then we got our new light poles down at on Commons Boulevard.
Looks much better.
When they first built it, as you all know, they did install all the concrete pedestals for the lights, but they just didn't install all the lights. They only installed about one out of every three or so. Mm-hmm.
Now the snowplows won't get that big bump when they go over the thing, they'll just knock the pole over. So. It's really going to be nice, though, because it's pretty dark in those circles coming through there. I wish the circles were gone.
You know, right down here, it's dark.
It's
in our parking lot?
No. Yeah, when you get across the bridge and turn off.
Oh, on the street?
Yeah, we need something there. People like me.
I'm not sure we can put it in there.
Reflectors.
We have to check with VDOT or something.
You probably don't come that way. Okay, that's true.
I have not been down there after dark. I may swing by there tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to check
when you
this
come
out.
They just finished the lights very dark.
Yesterday afternoon or this morning. So. Mm-hmm. And we got one new issue. I think I mentioned it in passing when I was speaking to you a couple meetings ago, the last meeting. Mm-hmm. The well that serves the Pleasant Grove House is basically contaminated. It's failed a series of bacteriological tests. The water turns sort of an orangish, yellow, muddy color when it rains during and after rain events. And as near as we can determine in consulting with the gentleman from the health department and with well drillers in the area, that it's either a crack somewhere in that well casing that was used when it was drilled or the grout job has failed. Started out looking into possibly setting up over top of that hole and trying to drill right in the same place, maybe drilling out a bigger hole and put in a better casing and grout. Most well drillers that I've talked to have recommended against that. Hmm. So as part of a remediation plan, part one would be to set up really close to the existing well and drill larger diameter, a little bit deeper well. This one to be drilled in accordance with public water supply standards. A class 2B well is basically the lowest public water supply standard. Class 1A and 1B are deeper with deeper casings. Our permitting is underway with the Department of Health. The gentleman, I met with him last Friday out at the site. We're working on getting prices from a couple of well drillers now. But the idea would be to drill a new well, do the initial rig testing on it stuff, and if it appears to have promise, we would then abandon the existing wells, do the official quantity and quality testing, at which point, assuming it passes, we would construct what they call a pitless adapter with a concrete apron that drains water away from the casing, and then just connect everything back into the existing water lines, exactly the way it is. And the way it is right now is the pressure tank and chlorine injection, if it ends up being needed, will be done in a utility Pleasant Grove House. I'm not a big fan of having chemical injection for water systems in buildings that are in use for something else. So I'll get that in a second. Here's our existing wellhead. You can see a little sketch there of what I want to put in there. And then that's a couple of pitless adapter units from different places. The pictures I just pulled off the internet. The boxes and things you see behind there would not be in place. Now, because it's not really good practice to have your chemical injection or other treatment, off in your office building or in, say, a museum, I would ultimately like to build a well house out there. It would contain a water storage tank, the well controls, chemical injection systems, and supplies. Yeah. Spare rooms, flooring, thing up, stuff that you can't do right now. And it would all be outside the Pleasant Grove house. Allows for safer and more efficient operations of the well. The new well would easily be able to be rerouted to this, plenty of room water lines out there. The exterior facade can and, in fact, probably will be made to somehow be complementary to the Pleasant Grove house.
It'll have a half moon on the door.
And this, doing this now will allow for easier future connection to whatever regional water system forms out there. If you already have by building a well to public water supply standards, by having a well house.
Look into the future.
It's really a matter of just routing it into whatever system, larger system you may end up with. We'll close it out by giving you a few pictures of different historic type well houses that I was able to find. Couple of these. That one and that one, well, even that one are actually in use as well facilities. The other two, the smooth earth stone one and the ruffian timber one, are just structures. Mm-hmm. And another thing that's possible, although I would want to see it before I would recommend putting it out there, is this little thing in the middle is sort of a false stone.
Oh.
Like cover that you can put over the pit adapter unit itself to cover it up and make it so that it's not obvious.
Would this unit be able to go wherever we have that tank for the bathroom? Could we put it in there?
No, it can't go. It won't.
I didn't know if there was room or not. I knew we had a tank built somewhere as a storage tank.
One of the it brings up a couple things, I guess. There is the old building, that old wooden building that's behind the house.
The chicken coop, or the thing that's converted to chicken coop.
It's got some kind of relevance to the historic district that was set up. I don't know that much about it. I know that I was just informed.
Don't touch
when
it.
When I first came here that we weren't really touching that. Said. Renovation. If we're going to keep it, it needs work. I mean, it needs some kind of renovation. If we're going to get rid of it, we should probably begin pursuing whatever.
That's what I don't want to ask, though.
Would we use that as a facade for a well house?
Right.
Potentially build a solid, mm-hmm. structure out of concrete panels or cinder block and concrete floor inside that building, renovate the exterior of it, and then that well house could be in that thing. One of the other things that I'm looking at that could help us to save some water at any rate and reduce the amount of storage that we need is, as of right now, the yard hydrants for me and the garden are fed by that well as well. And the yard hydrants that are in the back towards the activity or festival area and stuff are also fed by it. Now, the community garden by no means needs drinking water. They water the gardens with it. There is an old spring on the property, Rock Black, showed it to me a while back, and one of the possibilities would be to rebuild a spring box there, get a pump, electric service back to that, and use it to serve the community garden. That takes 20 yard hydrants off of that system, and so greatly reduces the amount of water it needs to supply, and splits up the water supply, basically. This spring water comes from upper levels of the underground water, so it's considered surface water, and then your wells draw from deep groundwater. So,
and you can drink the spring rainwater.
These are all things that I would consider in the future, because what we need to do right now is number one.
Yeah.
I expect to bring a capital reserve maintenance request to the next meeting if prices narrow down. Rough guess, I mean, in all honesty, we're probably looking at about $25,000 for part one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any questions?
When was that original well placed there?
You know, I'm not sure.
Was it part of the construction that just occurred?
No. This was existing when we, when the well closed. When we bought it. I think it was existing when the county took over.
Yeah, probably. Because, I mean, it's not, it can't be a really, really old one if it's plastic casing, well, sure. but it's also not.
It's not really old, but it's not new either. Yeah. Right. I know the county's drilled a couple of wells out there. They drilled one out there near the soccer fields, which is the one that the high school is tied into. And I think there's one other that may have been a dry hole. I honestly don't know whether the county drilled that well or whether I think it was actually already there. Great. Okay. In any case, it does not meet the standards for public water supply. So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Stevens. Next, we have our fiscal year 15 third quarter budget report. Ms. Marianne Twisby, our management analysis.
This is the third quarter budget report, and mm-hmm. This is the third quarter. Typically, departments should be at about 75% of their budget, and with the exception of what we talked about before, which would be the 435 and the planning commission, because it's self-powered, all departments are within that expected range.
Mm, great.
Uh-huh.
That's a report.
Yeah,
Mr. Williams, not here, right?
That. Hey, I'd like to check the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Any questions?
Did you get paid overtime for that?
Thank you, Mike Weaver.
Do we need a vote?
I just want to recognize you and say thank you. You're a valued county employee.
Thank you. We don't need a motion or anything. We just
no, ma'am.
Accept it. All right. Now, consent agenda. Does anyone want to pull anything? If not, may I have a motion for the consent agenda, please?
So made.
Second. It has been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And next, any unfinished business?
Oh.
Sir.
This would probably go under old, and I thought about it when we talked about the tourism. I said something to Jonathan about, or not.
To Jason?
Jason.
He's got his brief ready for, I think, the 20th.
Okay, because he told me he didn't have any information when I just spoke to him. Okay.
On
both ramps?
Ramps?
Type deal. Yeah. That's okay. He's not here.
Oh. No, I think he's doing it on the 20th.
All right. I just wanted to make sure, because you had said we were going to do a briefing, and I wanted to make sure we were going through with that, because this is that time of the year.
It was on my list again for him last week, so.
Okay. So we've done. I will now open the second public comments.
Anyway, Christina, come on.
Anybody like to speak
get
to
up
the
there.
Board?
You say
have
something.
3 minutes.
You got nothing.
I've just closed.
Tell us about
the
your kids. I mean,
closed session, Mr. O'Brien.
Okay, I'm going to try to do justice to Mr. Weaver, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
Chairwoman. Madam Chairwoman, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.3, real estate discussion or consideration of acquisition of real property for a public purpose or disposition of publicly held real property. Section 2.2-3711A.5, prospective industry discussion concerning a prospective business or industry or the expansion of an existing business or industry where no previous announcement has been made. Section 2.2-3711A7, legal matters, consultation with legal counsel and briefings by staff members or consultants pertaining to actual or probable litigation of the Virginia Code, of the Code of Virginia, 1950 as amended, for the purpose of discussing real estate, prospective industry, legal matters.
All right, can I have a second?
Yes, ma'am.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Sherk. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No one here to oppose, so we are going into closed session.
Okay. Madam Chairman,
yes, sir.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business as public matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay, may I have a second? All right.
Except for my name, please.
Aye.
Do you agree?
Aye.
Okay, and aye. You agree, and the chair says aye. May I have a motion for an adjournment, please?
So late. You have to just second poll.
What I poll.
We did it.
I poll. All right, it has been moved by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. O'Brien to adjourn. All in favor? Chair votes aye.
Thanks.
Have a